lies behind this turmoil? He said this on the Rest Is Politics podcast.
The nihilism of much of the mainstream media, the anarchy of social media, with dissonance, hypocrisy, short-termism, naivety, industrialised rage, that were becoming almost ungovernable.
Nothing to do with bad policies, NL. In other news, super row at the Super Bowl.
United States, Canada, a my motherland, mi patria, Puerto Rico. Seguimos aquí.
Donald Trump now angry because there was a lot of Spanish, which has apparently offended him. Plus, the suggestion that Jeffrey Epstein took a Romanian model for dinner with Andrew Mountbatten Windsor at Buckingham Palace. We'll have more on that as well. Those stories and plenty more, actually, after the 7 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, Keir Starmer will address Labour MPs later as he fights to save his job following the Lord Mandelson scandal. His Chief of Staff, Morgan McSweeney, resigned yesterday. He said he took full responsibility for advising the Prime Minister to appoint the peer as US Ambassador. LBC's Lewis Goodall says he believes Sir Keir's days in office are numbered.
When you've got a Prime Minister who, they have firewalls, they have protective shields, they have excuses they can make. The last of the protective shields is their top advisor. And we've seen it before with prime ministers, that when they lose their advisor, there is nowhere left. There's no remaining exposure that they can sort of draw back on.
Andrew Mountbatten Windsor allegedly shared confidential reports from his role as UK's trade envoy with Jeffrey Epstein. Emails from the Epstein files also suggest that Andrew shared confidential details of investment opportunities. The former prince had been contacted for comment. He's previously denied any wrongdoing in relation to Epstein. A court in Hong Kong has sentenced the pro-democracy campaigner Jimmy Lai to 20 years in prison. The 78-year-old British national was convicted under China's national security law. He's always denied the charges against him. Universities have been told to report threats of foreign interference directly to the government and security services. MI5 and the National Cybersecurity Centre have given a rare briefing to more than 70 institutions. University leaders were given guidance on how to recognise and resist attempts to manipulate their work. And hundreds of flood warnings and alerts are in place across Britain following days of non-stop rain in some areas. The vast majority of them are in England, with parts of western Scotland also badly affected. There are three flood alerts in force along the Welsh border. Met Office forecaster Marco Petenia has told LBC that it's likely to remain unsettled for the rest of the week.
Low pressures coming in from the west become slow moving across the UK, so giving us further outbreaks of rain. We've already got a warning in force for the south west of England and south Wales for Monday afternoon and Monday evening. Could well see another 10 to 30 millimetres of rain across the southwest corner of the UK.
In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen later at 10,369 after closing up 60 on Friday. The pound buys $1.36 and €1.15. LBC weather, cloudy with outbreaks of rain to start. Heavy rain will push into the southwest later with more flooding possible, a high of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
I've got that feeling. Yeah. Butterflies in the stomach. Yeah. My heart is racing. I'm smiling for no reason at all. Yeah. I can't think about anything else.
Well, what's their name?
It's Škoda.
With 0% APR for 3 years across the Škoda range with Solutions PCP, it's love at first drive. But this love story ends March 1st, so visit škoda.co.uk. Indemnities may be required. Maximum 36-month term. Škoda Finance.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning. You 3 minutes after seven on Monday, February the 9th. And so the sorry saga drags on with power draining away. As you've already heard, of course, here on LBC, Morgan McSweeney decides to leave the government. Didn't know he was an elected member of the government. There we are. He decides to leave the government. Where does that leave the Prime Minister with all the coming and going? And of course, the row about Peter Mandelson and the Jeffrey Epstein continue in so many other levels. I've already mentioned the possibility, the allegations that Epstein took a Romanian model for dinner with Andrew Mountbatten Windsor at Buckingham Palace. There's also the row over the golden goodbye handed out to former Ambassador Mandelson, believed to be in the region of £50,000 or £55,000. Well, can we have that cash back, please? Work and Pensions Secretary Pat McFadden said yesterday on Sky News.
Either give it back or give it to a charity, perhaps one involving violence against women and girls. I think taking a payoff in these circumstances, I don't think the public will think much of that.
Plus, are you one of the graduates from university, or is it your son or your daughter or your children or your grandchildren saddled with debt, on average around £66,000 a year before they have to start paying off any of the debt? But some of those debts in some instances are 80, if not more, £80,000. Former Deputy Prime Minister Sir Nick Clegg told me last month about the system. Remember, he was effectively one of the architects.
I think it is definitely worth thinking of a real overhaul now. This doesn't seem to be... the governments just seem to be tinkering rather than looking in the round about how to make university finances sustainable.
Now former Labour Education Secretary Alan Johnson says the interest on the loan should be cut. More on that later in the show. Plus, scorn in the USA, fury from Donald Trump over the halftime show, which seems to have angered him because most of it was in Spanish. What were they expecting? And...
sweet dreams are made of...
ever been concerned, puzzled, bewildered by the dreams you have while you're a kip? Well, would you like to know how to engineer your dreams? Yes, you did hear that correctly. Stay tuned, it's later in the show.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Well, for one newspaper today, it's how long can Starmer go on? My question for you today is, Sakir Starmer, what's the point? There's nothing happening. Everything he touches dissolves. Did you hear the unfortunate news? You know that when he went over to China, he raised the case of Jimmy Lai, the Hong Kong campaign? Overnight, he's got 20 years. So whatever this man touches is disastrous. And, of course, as recently as Wednesday, Morgan McSweeney, and we'll again explain to you exactly who he is in a moment, because I do think sometimes the media gets a little bit excited with itself. But now he, having said he's a vital part of his government, he's decided to go. LBC's political editor, Natasha Clark, has the full details. Natasha, good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, Morgan McSweeney is out. And I think the real takeaway today is it leaves Sakir Starmer extremely exposed and, of course, fighting for his political career without his right-hand man. This was how the Prime Minister described his chief of staff just a few days ago at PMQs.
Prime Minister.
Morgan McSweeney is an essential part of my team. He helped me change the Labour Party and win an election. Of course I have confidence in him.
But yesterday he walked, or it sounds like potentially pushed, out of the vital job he has held to Sakir Starmer for years. Here was the Work and Pensions boss, Pat McFadden, speaking just a few hours earlier, saying he didn't think he should go.
I don't think he should. In the end, it's a prime ministerial, well, signed off by the King, but it's a prime ministerial appointment, and prime ministers have to take responsibility for the decisions that they make. And yes, you know, I don't know the advice that was given. But in the end, it's a prime ministerial appointment. And I think the stuff about Morgan McSweeney is sort of beside the point.
And that's the question that many MPs are asking him today. Well, if he was the one that gave him this advice, why is the Prime Minister not the one that takes the flak for it? Now, Nick, Morgan McSweeney, you're right, not many of our listeners will probably know who he is. He was a seasoned political operator, vital in turning the party back to the centre and away from the left. He worked first for Tony Blair, then for Steve Reid, Liz Kendall. He also helped the party fight against the BNP in East London in the 2000s, became director of an influential Labour think tank, then went on to work for Sakir Starmer, orchestrated his leadership bid back in 2020, and then went on to do the party's landslide win. After Sue Gray left, which only around a year ago, actually, he emerged on top. But like many aides to the Prime Minister, he has lately been the victim of briefings, blame, and loads of negative stories. And last night, he took responsibility for the appointment of Peter Mandelson as US ambassador. The Prime Minister said it had been an honour to work with him and that he had played a central role in his government. And today, Nick, the question... Labour MPs have all welcomed the move, but is this going to be enough to keep him in place, and for how long? Our own Andrew Marr said yesterday that the Prime Minister, he feels, could step down quite quickly.
In life, there's always a chance. You never quite know what's round the corner, Henry, but I think it's over for Keir Starmer. I would not be surprised to see him resign quite quickly now.
You're referring to the next week or so?
Yeah. I mean, no one knows. It depends very much on his own state of mind. We read that he's... I've not spoken to him, but we read that he's both very, very angry and depressed and so on. So he's feeling in a mercurial mood. You can never tell what somebody in that mood's going to do. But I think if he decides to dig in and carry on, it's going to be an utterly miserable experience for him. And I think he must be thinking there has to be a way out.
Now, Pat McFadden even admitted yesterday there is a world in which the Prime Minister does quit. But most of the MPs I've spoken to over the last 24 hours, Nick, say yes, he is safe for now, that this will buy him just a little bit more time. The MP, Labour MP Natalie Fleet, says he has spent his entire career fighting for victims.
I do not want him to resign, and I'll tell you why. We've just never had a Prime Minister that cares as much about violence against women and girls that he does. If he ends up resigning, it will be the most ironic thing that he has spent his entire career fighting for people like me before he'd even met me. This is a man that cares deeply.
But others say the end is inevitable and it is now time for him to go. The Tories say that he needs to own his own decisions. Here is Alex Burkhardt speaking to Lewis yesterday.
I don't think that the Prime Minister's position can stand.
So you think he should resign?
Yeah, I do. I think he's done something wrong. And I think he's shown that his judgment is at fault.
Now, the Prime Minister is expected to address Labour MPs tonight in Parliament. It's a bit of a make-or-break appearance for him. He'll say the last few days have been tough. He will set out what his plan is, what his values are, and why he is the right person. That's according to people I've been speaking to in Downing Street. So the next 4 hours, it feels like, Nick, are going to be absolutely vital. The Prime Minister determined to fight on. Let's see how it goes.
LBC's political editor, Natasha Clark, reporting. Let's turn straight to Luke Sullivan, who served as political director to Keir Starmer until 2024 and is now director at Headland Consultancy and is quoted in today's Daily Telegraph and in other papers, and quoted as anyone saying that he, Sir Keir, would have loathed losing his top aide. Luke Sullivan joins me now. Why so, Luke? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, I think as you've just excellently explained to your listeners who Morgan McSweeney is, Morgan was absolutely instrumental as the Prime Minister's most long-standing and senior political aide, and I don't think either of them would have ever wanted to have got to the position they got to yesterday. And it's a sign of the grave political peril that the Prime Minister is in fighting for his political life this week. That was how we came to be yesterday afternoon.
Luke, can you talk us through the choreography or whatever it might be for you and your colleagues? So you send Mr. McFadden out, or he is sent out in the morning, and he's a good performer, you'll accept that, and he's one of your top team, I would suggest, on the media round. And he's holding the line, no, Morgan McSweeney, he needs to say it makes no difference. And then, really, he's probably only just got out of his car and had a cup of tea 4 or 5 hours later, and the bloke's gone. I mean, where's the joined-up thinking here, Luke?
Look, I think Pat McFadden, as you say, is one of the Labour Party's best media performers. He's also one of the government's best government ministers. And in many ways, actually, you know, for those of us obsessively following the media, I think the Sunday newspapers weren't brilliant for the government. But I think given how difficult the political situation was, there wasn't particularly any new media line in there that you would have thought immediately caused number 10 problems. I think essentially Morgan McSweeney, yes, was a very powerful advisor, but he was just that. He was a advisor selected. I think it's very difficult for media when you're not an elected public official to basically be under the form of pressure that Morgan McSweeney was under. But I think as I was asked over the weekend and throughout last week, essentially getting rid of Morgan McSweeney doesn't fundamentally change the position the Prime Minister finds himself in. And in many ways, I think, as I'd all say in your clip just before, yes, that is part of the problem, that when you get rid of staff, especially when it's around an issue or a judgment, sometimes it's one of your lines of defence is going. And, you know, I think one of the things, and it may seem sort of peripheral to where we are, but Parliament goes into recess on Thursday for 10 days. I think up until that period, this is going to be day by day, and the Prime Minister is fighting for his political life.
So the scaffolding is built. They're just about to erect the guillotine. Is there anything he can do?
Look, there is, absolutely. And I think the Prime Minister is going to fight his way through. I don't think he is a quitter. I think he will take solace in having been in very difficult political positions before. But he has to go out and continue to fight. And I mean, I think last week, I think the Prime Minister did almost everything he humanly possibly could to try to contain this political crisis. I think in many ways, this political crisis, as your news headlines have just shown is bigger than just this question around the appointment of Peter Mandelson, however big that is. This is a crisis, I think, for all of those in public life. There's this appointment as a question the Prime Minister tries to answer questions there. But I think one of the key things Number 10 need to try and do as soon as humanly possible is to get the vetting material out. And yes, I know the Met Police don't want all of it released, but we need to try and get some of that out. There needs to be a way this government tries to move on and get on the front foot, because, you know, at the moment it's very difficult going.
Grateful for your time. Luke Sullivan, thank you. You're director at Headland Consultancy. You serve as political director to Sir Keir Starmer until July 2024. Apologies for a few blips on the line, but we're coming to your calls already, Colin, coming through. In answer to this question, Sir Keir Starmer, what's the point? And talking of other world leaders, scorn in the USA from Donald Trump for this. That is, of course, the legendary Bad Bunny performing his song DTMF during the Super Bowl halftime show overnight, much to the fury of Trump. We'll explain why later in this hour. 7.15, LBC News Headlines. Dominic Ellis.
Sir Keir Starmer will address Labour MPs later as he fights to shore up his leadership following the Lord Mandelson scandal. Andrew Mountbatten Windsor allegedly shared confidential reports from his role as the UK's trade envoy with Jeffrey Epstein. And a court in Hong Kong has sentenced the pro-democracy campaigner Jimmy Lai to 20 years in prison. LBC weather, a largely cloudy day with spells of rain pushing northwards. Heavier rain will push up from the southwest later, a high of 11 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Delays on the Hertfordshire stretch of the M25 clockwise from junction 17 at Maple Cross to 18 at Chorley Wood. It's because of an accident where one lane is closed. Then on the M40 southbound, there are delays to the M25. There's been an accident and two lanes are closed for recovery. Also to the M25, there's a long delay on the A13 westbound from Grays. And this is because a lorry has broken down, so one lane stays closed for recovery. On the trains, DLR services aren't running between Canning Town and Stratford International. It's all down to a signal failure, and then there are severe delays on the rest of the line.
This is LBC.
Sunlight's guaranteed over 50 plan gave confidence to Jane and Chris. With their insurance sorted, they're becoming naturists. Cutting loose in their birthday suits, feeling elegant and free. But when they answered the door, the postman saw more than he expected to see. Sunlight, a little confidence goes a long way. Affordable cover with a cash payout. Search Sunlight Cover today.
Premiums paid could exceed the payment. Full cover after 1 year. Ages 49 to 85.
This is LBC. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app. Download it now from your app store.
Donations to British Heart Foundation fund scientific research that can help save lives. People like Joe, who's pitching his next big business plan. Maria, who's sending out her wedding invitations. And Jack, who's just being a teenager again. Because when you donate, you fund more than just science. You help save lives. British Heart Foundation funds research that aims to cure inherited heart muscle diseases. But our work is not done. Donate now at bhf.org.uk and keep us beating.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
The Volkswagen Fantabulous, Fandabby-dozy, Fandanger-ding-dong fortnight is here.
Stop. We've been through this, Harry. It's the Volkswagen Fantastic Fortnight. Much snappier.
Oh, okay. From the 2nd to the 16th of February, the Volkswagen Fantastic Fortnight gives you an extra £1,000 towards your finance deposit on top of existing offers on the Polo, Golf, Tiguan and our all-electric ID3, 4 and 5 with Solutions PCP 7.9% APR representative. Visit your nearest Volkswagen retailer now. Hurry, offer ends 16th of February. Better?
Perfect.
Indemnities may be required. Volkswagen Financial Services.
Check you're on track for a happy retirement with PensionBee's easy-to-use app. Because when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. When investing, your capital is at risk.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
19 minutes after 7, Colin coming to you. I'm asking a simple question. Sir Keir Starmer, colon, what's the point? Question mark. There really is none. But in office, but not in power. Farcical. I mean, even more embarrassing, Remember, they said he did all the lobbying he could for Jimmy Lai a couple of weeks ago when he was over in China and he met with President Xi, the pro-democracy campaigner. Right, he got 20 years last night. So it would be better, actually, to have Keir Starmer not lobby. Keir, could you possibly not say a word about me? Then I might stand a chance because you are so bloody toxic. That is how bad it is now. Anything you touch turns into the mulligatawny. Now, some of you are saying, why are you still going on about this, Nick? I mean, if you allow the newspapers to at least set the agenda, when I tell you that every single newspaper, from the Financial Times all the way down to, save for the Sun, and they've got a cracking story, every single one of them is on this story, and is also leading all the bulletins. For those of you, I do think if we've got the Prime Minister on the brink, that's what we in this business call news, I would suggest. I told you earlier that one newspaper, the Daily Mail, is asking how long can he go on, which is probably a little more cordial than mine, asking what's the point. The Daily Express, our Starmer's day is numbered as key aide resigns. The Daily Mirror, trying to hold the line, blame me, focusing it all on Morgan McSweeney. Let's take one other. The Daily Telegraph, Starmer plays his last card as McSweeney leaves number 10. The other story on the front page is The Sun. Andy leaked envoy docs to Epstein. You've heard this on the LBC News Bulletin. This is disgraced. The man formerly known as Prince, now disgraced, Andrew Mountbatten. Documents show leaked trade envoy reports to Jeffrey Epstein. Now, we're going to be speaking with a journalist at the Mail on Sunday who had a cracking story on a similar theme yesterday. We'll get more on that yesterday's front page and more on today's in a moment. But Colin, in Manchester, let's be fair, came through very early on in the day when I asked, what's the point, Keir Starmer, what's your reaction? Good morning.
Good morning. Well, he's a dead man walking, Nick.
He is. He is.
No matter what is... BR team do now, he's had it.
Yeah.
But I can only go off personal experience of the 65 years I've been alive.
right.
discount the first probably 16, 17 years because politics I didn't even think about.
Right.
From then on, Nick, let's face it, we've had governments that have basically messed up right through my life. Now,
I think Thatcher achieved a few things, and I think Blair achieved a few things, in fairness, Colin.
Oh, Blair?
Yeah.
Where's the weapon?
The NHS.
He left the
NHS. I think his policy as regards opening the doors to people from Europe was disastrous. I'll just say the one four-letter word, Iraq. But the NHS and education, he wasn't bad on that. Back to you, Colin.
Right, back to me. At the end of the day, the country's in a mess, let's face it.
Yep.
An absolute mess.
Yep.
Patriotism is virtually zero. We haven't got a military. We haven't got a presence in the world. The politicians bicker in Parliament. Do these people, these buffoons, not realise that this is being broadcast live around the world? We're a laughing stock, Nick. An absolute laughing stock. I get rid of a lot of them. I get rid of the House of Lords. Stop all the corruption. Stop the leeching. And then I'd put the king in charge and put people in positions, Nick,
yep,
that had experience in that role rather than appointing an MP into a position he's never, ever even been in.
Well, you might, if reform are in any way, shape or form successful, they are talking about putting businessmen and women in place in positions such as you speak and not necessarily relying on their political background. Just lastly, I want to play you that we're going to be doing this later in the show, but you've got me started, so let's start thinking about this. Alistair Campbell, one of the great creators of New Labour and, of course, a real attack dog, he's been strangely reticent about this, Colin, but he's just recently said on his The Rest Is... And listen to what he puts the general malaise, or, as you say, the mess of the country. This is on his Rest Is Politics podcast.
But because of the nature of our politics, the quality, if you like, of our politicians and the political gene pool, the nihilism of much of the mainstream media, the anarchy of social media, with dissonance, hypocrisy, short-termism, naivety, industrialised rage and willful ignorance off the scale, that we're becoming almost ungovernable, that neither the parties nor the public are really prepared to face up to the big things that need to happen to turn this country around.
Colin, we're in a mess and we're almost ungovernable. In a sentence, how do you react?
First time I've heard that, Nick, I must admit.
That's what I'm here for.
I agree with everything he said, really, to be honest.
So do I. And I wanted your first reaction, because we're doing that later in the show. We will play it to you again. Don't worry, class. It's not that you have to remember it all, because there's some long words there. and it's early in the morning, and it's the weekend, and it's a Monday, so I don't expect you to remember. I don't expect you to be able to chant it from memory in a moment. But it's interesting to get his take on whatever you think about Mr. Campbell, and he has his pluses, and dear God, he has some negatives. Do you know, my father has a role in all of this. I do apologise, by the way. My late father selected Alistair Campbell for the Daily Mirror, for the Mirror Group training course. Yeah, there you go. So put it all down to me. Blame Dad. He's no longer around. We'll be playing you more. Oh, Colin, thank you. Have a good day. Let's come to other matters. And I said there have been a couple of corking splashes, one today and one yesterday. And let's start with that first. It was the Mail on Sunday. Very punchy when I went to the newsagents. Epstein's very cute Romanian for Andrew at Palace. And the author, or one of the two of the authors, are with colleagues of the editor-at-large of the Mail on Sunday, Charlotte Griffiths, who joins me now. OK, your colleagues who wrote that story, Daisy Graham-Brown, Mark Hookham, what was the points they were making? Morning to you. Good to see you, Charlotte.
Yeah. Morning. Yeah, the dream team of Daisy and Mark played a blinder with this one. So three women were due to go and meet Prince Andrew, then Prince Andrew at Buckingham Palace. And then Epstein adds a fourth and says, and very bossily, I thought, says, add a fourth, very cute, Romanian. And then there are also emails between Epstein and this very cute Romanian, who was obviously nervous about going and worried about her outfit. And he then, after the event, wrote to her and said, it's silly you for worrying about your jeans. You know, men see right through them. And the whole thing just paints a picture of these Romanian girls and Epstein himself inserting themselves into the very apex of royal power, which is Buckingham Palace, our most, you know, precious building there is in the country, I suppose. And fascinatingly, the Queen was in Balmoral. And I do think that Andrew manipulated, pulled the wool over her eyes, waited for her not to be there. However, you know, of course, these girls must have been signed in. There must be some documentation showing that they were there, that Epstein was there. And I just wonder which aides, which butlers, which men in grey suits weren't showing the Queen, or maybe they were and the Queen was looking away.
Well, we'll never know on that. But what we do appear to know, staying with Andrew, the nightmare of the front pages goes on, Charlotte. The Sun, disgraced Andrew Mountbatten wins a leaked trade envoy reports to Jeffrey Epstein documents show. Do we have any background to that? And presumably, I mean, if this is a reality, we've got to get close now to getting the old bill, to getting the police involved, haven't we?
Well, definitely, because his role as trade envoy is governed by the Official Secrets Act, even after his role finished. The question of how he even got that role in the first place rears its ugly head again, because I'm sure he obviously got special treatment, or the Queen might have had a word to get him that job. He was so unsuited to it. And now we finally have proof that he was unsuited to it, because in early December 2010 and in early 2011, he forwarded two emails to Epstein. One said, made me think of you, which was an investment opportunity. And the one in December detailed important facts about reconstruction in Helmand province. And obviously was offering Epstein an opportunity to invest in that as well. So he was tipping off Epstein, really, about what he was learning as the official trade envoy, a job that I think he was wholly unqualified for in the first place.
Charlotte Griffiths, editor-at-large of the Mail on Sunday, talking about your dream team yesterday. Thank you for taking us through those two royal stories and getting us to 7:27. Linda is in Kids Grove, coming back to Sir Keir Starmer. What's the point of him at the moment? Or now, actually? Good morning, Nick.
I enjoy the programme very much.
Thank you.
What's upset me the most, Nick, is people have turned their back on the vote. I'm not going to.
Yes.
I'm not going to bother. I'm not going to get off my backside and vote. And people have fought and died in two world wars for that, Nick. And then you've got that poor man in China who wants to speak out for this, that, and the other.
Yeah.
And you think, oh, I'm not. My nan used to say the only thing you can really call your own is your vote. And I feel so sorry for people. What the hell has this country come to? I really don't know.
Lastly, and we're going to do this more, it's because we've become almost ungovernable. We, the mainstream media, are partly to blame. Social media, in the view of Alistair Campbell, is very much to blame, with industrialised rage. Any truth to what he's saying in your book?
Well, I'd like to think what Tony Blair's going to say. Tony Blair has been very quiet, hasn't he?
His silence is deafening. One wonders why. Linda, thanks for your input. Darren in Chelmsford, what's the point of Sir Keir Starmer?
I would ask, Nick, I would say, what's the point of politicians? I go back to the point made by the other gentleman. Politicians, red, blue or yellow, have failed this country over the years. What we need now is common sense people running this country, dealing with NHS, education, law and order, not based on left or right, but based on common sense politics. They have failed us, Nick, and it's time for us to have a new direction.
How? What does that new direction? You wouldn't have any political parties?
Well, it needs to be worked out, but for the first time in my 56 years, I'm looking at reform. I'm looking at for somebody different to run this country. They've failed. None of them can run anything.
No, they can't.
They cannot run anything. They're based on political left or right, and that's where they follow, which you may say that's what politicians are supposed to do, but it doesn't run our country. It doesn't sort our NHS, our education, or our law and order.
Very gloomy, Darren, but I think you probably will have more reactions on that. Derek, hopefully you can hold to the other side of the news. Also coming up later in the show, the ex-education secretary, Alan Johnson, calls for a cut in the eye-watering student loan interest. Some of these poor souls are coming out of university with debts in the region of £80,000. I talked to this about two former Deputy Prime Minister Sir Nick Clegg last month, reminding him, of course, he was the architect of the new system.
I think it is definitely worth thinking of a real overhaul now. This doesn't seem to be... the governments just seem to be tinkering rather than looking in the round about how to make university finances sustainable.
Plus, Dame Jacqueline Wilson says that reading is in peril because children see it as boring. But meanwhile... The number of novels sold rose nearly fivefold year on year, with Emily Bronte's Wuthering Heights up by 469%, as anticipated for that new movie. So the kids might be reading, but the grown-ups are enjoying Wuthering Heights. But if you started it, have you actually got to the end? Have you reached the gripping climax of Wuthering Heights? Good luck to you if you did. It's 7:30. You're listening to Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, here on LBC. The news is with Dominic Ellis.
Keir Starmer will address Labour MPs later in a bid to secure their support following the Lord Mandelson scandal. Keir's Chief of Staff, Morgan McSweeney, resigned yesterday, saying that he took full responsibility for the peer's appointment as US ambassador. Andrew Mountbatten-Windsor has been accused of sharing confidential trade information with Jeffrey Epstein. Newly released email suggest he forwarded reports from his role as the UK's trade envoy in 2010 and 2011. And the pro-democracy campaigner Jimmy Lai has been sentenced to 20 years in prison in Hong Kong. The British citizen, who's 78, was found guilty in December under China's national security law. LBC weather, cloudy with outbreaks of rain to start. Heavy rain will push into the southwest by the afternoon, a high of 11 degrees.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
I just don't see any way in which Keir Starmer makes it to 2029. I don't see any way in which Keir Starmer makes it to the end of the year, to be honest with you. Any kind of wriggle room that Keir Starmer might have been able to generate through expectation management or signs that things are getting better. All that is cut away by what has happened over the last few days.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
For everyone you love this Valentine's, there's a Moonpig. Like that special someone who feels like home. Or your date, who you try not to get too excited about.
Mm-hmm.
Even your bestie, who knows your type before you do. So create stickers, add your handwriting, and photos that bring your memories to life. And get 20% off with code LOVE20. Because this Valentine's Day, everyone deserves a...
Moonpig.com.
This is 40-year-old Kathy, mother of two and self-confessed telly addict.
Oh, look at you. That's brilliant. Well done.
This is also Kathy, working as part of a team to keep things calm at her local prison.
Come on! Come on! Listen, speak to me.
And helping someone's son write his first letter home in 8 months.
Well done. You should be really proud.
Thank you, miss.
An extraordinary job done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
Thanks for a lovely evening. Would you like to come in for a coffee?
Yeah, okay. That'd be lovely.
Oh, gosh, sorry. I didn't mean... I just wanted you to see my new Wickes kitchen. It's just been installed.
At Wickes, our experts will support you every step of the way, from a free kitchen design service through to a professional installation. Plus, right now, find big savings in the Wickes kitchen sale. Book a free design appointment and feel as proud as a peacock with Wickes. Terms apply.
Donations to British Heart Foundation fund scientific research that can help save lives. People like Joe, who's pitching his next big business plan. Maria, who's sending out her wedding invitations. And Jack, who's just being a teenager again. Because when you donate, you fund more than just science. You help save lives. British Heart Foundation funds research that aims to cure inherited heart muscle diseases. But our work is not done. Donate now at bhf.org.uk and keep us beating.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
More of your answers to my questions. Sir Keir Starmer, colon, what's the point? Question mark. Derek, you'll be the next caller on that. But into the world of business and finance, Christian May, editor-in-chief at City AM, will tell us about the story that is the second lead on the Financial Times, because even they go with the Mandelson, Morgan, McSweeney, Starmer dramas. But their second story, luxury suite success for top hotels due to super-rich travellers. Super-rich Christian May joins me now. What's the story? Morning.
Good morning to you, Nick. Well, look, I know for a fact that you don't stay in any hotel that doesn't have a hyperbaric oxygen therapy suite or a sound bath.
Neither does my butler, by the way. Never mind me. I wouldn't let my butler go in one.
Quite right, too. Where would we be without hyperbaric oxygen? Mm. And so this is why what we call the ultra-luxury hotels, ultra-lux, I mean, I don't know what they look like. I've never been through the lobby of one, but they are charging increasingly astronomical rates for their rooms. And there are two reasons for that. One is because, like all other hotels, whether it's a budget one or indeed these ultra-lux, their costs have increased. Certainly here in the UK, let's look at that. The cost base has increased dramatically, but also the kind of people who would stay in one of these extraordinary rooms or suites tend to have done quite well over the course of the last year. For example, if you look at way in which they might have generated returns from some of their investments, stock markets are doing particularly well in the US and in the UK at record high. So people who feel a little flush perhaps can afford to meet these prices. And it's all about, according to the analysis from people who do know about these kinds of hotels, and that would be the FT, for example, putting in the amenities that now elevate an experience from simply a place to stay to a place to, indulge in hyperbaric oxygen therapy, yes, for
indeed.
Example.
Indeed. Talking about rather wonderful settings, is that your study you're talking to me from? This, I mean, the bookcases are groaning with tomes. You're an extraordinarily well-read man.
Nick, I'm very pleased you noticed it. Last time you saw me in this room, it was bright red. But we are in. We have moved
house. Looks fantastic.
I've got to tell you, though, Nick, what you can't see in this room is the consequences of our carpet fitters on Friday driving a nail through a water pipe.
Oh, dear. Well, they might just about still be in their job. Sadly, some folk over at Ocado might not be. The job's bloodbath goes on, Christian.
Well, Ocado is facing some pretty specific challenges. There was a time when it was the most futuristic, the most advanced business of its kind. Most people might know about it by the vans and a bit of food delivery, but it is in fact a major listed technology group, and it makes most of its money by trying to sell its extremely advanced robotics and fulfillment centres to other retailers around the world. And there was a time when that was just about the cutting edge, but you know, as we talk about a lot, Nick, there are huge advances in robotics and AI and automation, so the pressure's on them. One of the consequences of that, the Times reports that could be 1,000 jobs at risk, which should be about 5% of its global headcount. No decision has been made, but some of these job losses would be here in the UK and would be in sort of head office function, as well as some of the technology roles that might be a consequence of increased automation. But they said they're going to have a rigorous cost and capital discipline as their theme for the year ahead, and that does tend to mean in corporate speak that they're going to cut some headcount.
Shall we talk about the World Cup? Why is there a fear of a rip-off?
Well, presumably, Nick, because if you're going to pair the cost of a ticket to see England with a hotel suite that comes with a hyperbaric oxygen room, you're going to really feel the pinch. But as we've discussed before, and as many England fans will know, the pricing has left a lot of people absolutely outraged. It's the most expensive World Cup, I think, in history in terms of ticket prices. So far, every England match from the opening fixture onwards has failed to sell out for the allocation of England fans. About 90% of England supporters' travel clubs, 30,000 members, have refused to give in to the cost of tickets. The FA has sold just over 3,400 of the 4,500 seats that it was allocated for the July the 19th match at the MetLife Stadium. There were a handful of bargain seats at about £45. They've gone, but the others that are thousands and thousands of pounds are simply not shifting. And it's easy to understand why when you consider the costs of getting there, getting around, and then paying these enormous fees for a ticket.
Football in this country, of course, has imported a lot of overseas talent. Why are businesses doing the same, according to City AM Online, Christian?
Well, we've been looking at the latest data and analysis that's come out from a variety of institutions, including KPMG, BDO, and the Recruitment and Employment Confederation this morning, who said that cost pressures are such in the UK now that a lot of people are looking at whether to create jobs in the UK or elsewhere. Or indeed whether the jobs are require the human touch, as it's been put this morning in one note, as opposed, which is a sort of rather soft way of saying we're going to replace you with AI. The labour market is not in a terribly bright place at the moment. There is some evidence this morning that the downturn might be beginning to level off, and that people have now weighed up the consequences of the increased costs that they've had to swallow and are now looking to see where they can increase jobs. But there are some specific examples, and I'll give you one. Barclays is putting dozens of London jobs at risk. This is according to The Telegraph this morning, with plans to move roles to India, and a variety of other roles to be replaced by AI. And I think cumulatively, Nick, over the course of this year, we're going to see more and more of those sorts of decisions.
On that negative note, we'll finish for now. Christian May, thank you. Good luck with the plumbing. Your editor-in-chief at City AM coming to you, Derek. Just a couple of messages online. We had that earlier caller talk about looking for a new form of politics. Jutar says, how could people look at Farage or reform as a way to improve our politics in the UK? Have we learned nothing from looking at Trump? I despair. Meanwhile, Roger E says, is it time to look at the Chinese model? With a few exceptions, they've looked after their people. Well, they've looked after their people, but some of them were put in jail and never seen again. Some have vanished, and some are just allowed to starve. I think we'd just have a China crisis if we went that way. Derek's in Hendon. Derek, where do you want to take our conversation? Good morning.
Yeah, as you are the master of the media...
I wish.
Surely what Mandelson's done is a traitor. Right?
We have to tread carefully. Yeah, I mean, the Met raided his homes in London and Wiltshire on the weekend. They are looking for sensitive information. There are no charges currently, so we can talk. But yes, if he is charged with and convicted, yes, then he could be looking at something such as that. But
now, what has also happened, all this has happened through the back door, because the Americans, while they're protecting Clinton and everybody else, they're throwing the Brits under the bus. So Andrew and Mandelson, they're handing over all the emails and all the stories, right? Otherwise,
Bill and Hillary Clinton are going to testify.
Yes, but it'd be one
more than Andrew's going to do.
I know, and the English establishment Charles and William right behind him, because it goes all the way down. Well, I mean, Osborne going off to California and Blair, you know, ending up on this Gaza committee or something. I mean, what have they done? The whole of the establishment, they have let the English, they have let the British public down so badly.
Well, I agree with you. I would agree with you. Many would point, I mean, it's not that I'm seeking to minimise the impact of what you said, Derek, but we do have to look what will happen in the United States, of course, with a former president giving evidence. Derek, thank you. The fact that you've mentioned the United States means that we can take you to arguably their biggest night, at least their biggest sporting night or TV night, yesterday. It's Bad Bunny performing one of his hits at the Super Bowl halftime show, the Levi Stadium in San Francisco, closing out the performance with a message of unity by naming all the countries in the Americas, with a billboard behind him saying, the only thing more powerful than hate is love.
God bless America!
Then holding up a football with it, Together We Are America. Now, for one viewer, it was absolutely terrible, when the worst ever, it makes no sense, is an affront to the greatness of America, and doesn't represent our standards of success, creativity, or excellence. Nobody understands a word this guy is saying, and the dancing is disgusting, especially for young children. That would be President Donald Trump. Shall we get a more balanced comment now from Mike Madrid, who's author of Latino Century, How America's Largest Minority is Transforming Democracy. Mike, thanks for coming on the show. Your critique, your review, what did you see last night or this morning? Good morning.
Good morning. I thought it was a fantastic show. I did think it was kind of a pivotal moment in American culture. I think you characterized it accurately. This is sort of the annual spectacle that America does to showcase its cultural icons. And this is the first time in history that a Spanish-only artist was chosen. Of course, he's the largest artist, not just in America, but in the world. And I think that this changing demography, changing cultural elements, puts the fear of God in people like Donald Trump, and so they're going to react accordingly.
What's behind the success story that is Bad Bunny, Mike?
Well, again, I think it's, a lot of it's just demographics, and I think a lot of it is the changing institutions of the media industry that are allowing for different artists and finding different audiences. You know, the days of sort of Johnny Cash and, you know, country western music defining American culture, I'm saying that with a chuckle, are long past us, is in the rearview mirror. I mean, Kendrick Lamar was on the Super Bowl show, which of course drove MAGA equally as crazy. MAGA is about slowing down change. It's about trying to stop time. It's trying to reverse culture. That of course doesn't work, and so it's sort of this sad, pathetic slouching into, irrelevancy, generation by generation. And the sad part is, rather than embracing this and trying to push for the universality of American ideals, it's turned into this blood and soil movement that is, losing power by the day.
Lastly, as a cultural commentator, explain to Brits the significance of the halftime show.
It is the 1 hour that America makes a complete spectacle of itself, more than normal.
Well, I don't think you're too bad at it most other times, but go on, Mike.
The one exception is Americans were, well, this is American spectacle. This is the championship of America's making a spectacle.
This
of
one's
itself.
Scripted, huh? This one's at least scripted.
If there aren't fireworks and jets flying over and American flags waving, we're not doing it right. And there's one artist, you know, a singer and dancer that will kind of come out, usually the top performing artist of the year, because so much of American culture is popular, pop culture. And so that has generally defined the halftime show, which is as big of an event as the game itself.
Enjoy speaking with you. Get some rest or stay through the night, whatever you're going to do. Mike Madrid, thank you. Author of The Latino Century, How America's Largest Minority is Transforming Democracy. Back to democracy here, or really the collapse, or politics is a mess. But why? Former number 10 spin doctor Alistair Campbell said on his podcast The Rest is Politics yesterday,
the nihilism of much of the mainstream media, the anarchy of social media, with dissonance, hypocrisy, short-termism, naivety, industrialized rage, that we're becoming almost ungovernable.
And we'll look at that in more detail later in the hour. It's 7:46. LBC News headlines then. Dominic Ellis.
Sir Keir Starmer will address Labour MPs later as he fights to save his job following the Lord Mandelson scandal. It's alleged Andrew Mountbatten-Windsor shared confidential information with Jeffrey Epstein when he was working as the UK's trade envoy. And the Hong Kong media tycoon and pro-democracy campaigner Jimmy Lai has been sentenced to 20 years in prison. LBC weather cloudy with outbreaks of rain for most to start. Heavy rain will push into the southwest later, a high of 11 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. So many problems on the motorways this morning. The M25 traffic is being held clockwise just after Junction 18. At Chorley Wood, and there are delays back to Junction 16 at the M40. The M40 is very busy southbound to the M25 junction. That was after a separate accident, but all the lanes are now back open. Also on the M4, there are eastbound queues to Junction 5 at Langley. There was an accident that happened earlier. Everything's open, but it's slow back towards Junction 6 at Slough. The M1's very slow southbound at Junction 8 at Hemel Hempstead. There's been an accident and one lane is closed. DLR trains are now back up and running, but there are minor delays across the entire network.
This is LBC.
For GCSE and A-level success, one name stands out. Justin Craig. Small, tailored group tuition that really works. Justin Craig courses consolidate knowledge, boost confidence and improve technique for mocks, assessments and exams. Available in classrooms and online. One-to-one also available. With over 40 years' experience, Justin Craig has helped more than 100,000 students. For more details, visit justincraig.ac.uk. Justin Craig. Tailored for you.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
So, what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax, and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 991234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
A Southern train is a place where you can just switch off. Where you have the chance to scroll your feeds as you roll past fields. Or simply relax with a podcast, playlist or power nap. Go with your flow and save with advanced tickets at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
At Ocado, you'll save 25% on your first shop and get free delivery. Which means if you were to buy a four-cheese pizza, you'd basically be getting one of the cheeses for free. Save and splurge at Ocado, the online supermarket. Geographical and other restrictions. Minimum spend £60 and charges apply. New customers only. Maximum saving £20. Terms at Ocado.com.
The Philly cheese stack is back at McDonald's and it's still intensely cheesy. Imagine the cheesiest thing ever. Now cover it in cheese. Add two beef patties, cheddar cheese sauce, crispy onions and even more cheese. The Philly cheese stack. Did we mention it's cheesy? Available until the 16th of March 2026 from 11 a.m. Fees apply to delivery orders. Price and participation may vary, subject to availability.
Across the country, thousands of drivers are feeling electric about switching to an EV. And here's why. They can go from London to Sheffield on a single charge that could cost around a fiver. They're ecstatic about that and the exhilarating feeling behind the wheel. Plus, with charging made simple at home, they're always ready for the drive ahead. I can see why they're into it. Switch to an EV and get that electric feeling. Cost and range dependent on tariffs, model and driving habits. For full details, visit gov.uk/clean energy.
On a windswept walk in Carmarthen, while someone tries to use your card details to hire a speedboat in Cannes, this is the moment you relax, knowing that Barclays Advanced Tech has helped to spot the fraud in under a second, and their expert team are on hand to close it down. So you can get back to being windswept. Ooh. Just one of the ways we're protecting our customers 24/7. Search Barclays Fraud Protection. Barclays. Make money work for you.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
It's 9 minutes before eight now, where there is much division between us over many matters. I think we'd all agree that we want as much opportunity as we can for our younger people, our younger listeners and relatives and friends, and the government is about to try and do something about that as part of, or looking ahead to, National Apprenticeship Week. Here with more details, Labour Peer Skills Minister Jackie Now Baroness Smith. Minister, thank you for coming on. What is it you and your colleagues are talking about this morning? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Well, you're right. We're celebrating this week National Apprenticeship Week, where we see lots of young people having fantastic opportunities to learn and to earn, to get the skills they need to set them off on a really good career. But there's more that we need to do. We've seen a big drop in the numbers of young people able to take up apprenticeships over the last 7 years. We need to turn that around. We need to make sure that young people have got the information that they need to know which apprenticeship will make that sense for them, will bring them the best earnings, which is why we're going to change the information available to young people. And we're also going to make sure that if you've applied for some of the very competitive apprenticeships out there and you haven't been successful, you'll get the second chance, like a sort of university clearing process, to actually be linked up with employers who need apprentices in the local area.
Minister, how much is it your ambition and your colleagues and indeed the Prime Minister that these apprenticeships should be viewed almost or exactly on the same level as a university degree?
Well, it absolutely is our ambition, and that's why the Prime Minister set a target that two-thirds of young people should be able to get to higher level apprenticeships or degrees by the age that they get, by the time they get to 25. Because we know we need more opportunities for young people. We know we need more skills in the economy to deliver the new homes, the defence spending, the clean energy that's at the heart of our plan to change the country. And in order to be able to do that, we need more young people, frankly, both with degrees and with apprenticeships.
As we talk about universities, I have to remind you of a story from yesterday when your colleague Alan Johnson, a former universities minister, said that there needs to be a cut in the, quotes, eye-watering student loan interest. Is that something you would support?
Well, what I'm keen to ensure is that, first of all, we make sure that everybody who can benefit from a university education is able to do that. That's why we're reintroducing maintenance grants. It's why we're putting up the loans that you can get for maintenance. But of course, the student finance system, the terms of which, particularly the Plan 2 that you're talking about, were introduced by the last government, is a system aimed at trying to make sure that when you benefit from higher education, you're part of the answer to paying that back. And, you know, I understand.
A considerable interest, Baroness.
Well, but of course,
should it be RPI?
The interest rate that you pay doesn't determine how much you spend. This isn't like a mortgage where if interest changes, how much you pay changes. What determines that is how much you're earning. So if you are earning, let's say, £30,000 from this year, you'll be paying £4 a month. The interest rate will determine how long you repay for, but not how much you pay.
But why would we charge our young people north of 4%, or at least December's figures, north of 4%? How is that fair?
Well, I get that people are worried about the cost of living pressures that they're facing, including for those people who are earning above the threshold, how much they're repaying in terms of their student debt. There are a whole range of ways that we can tackle that. One, by making sure the student loan system is fair for those on lower incomes, and in fact those who haven't been to university at all, but also by tackling things like childcare costs, the costs of housing, how much it costs to send your children to school. All of those things are action this government is taking. But if you benefit from a university degree, and people do in terms of higher pay throughout their lives, it's right that you should help investment from government as well in your ability
to do that. Pay back at CPI, which always, nearly always, university is lower than RPI. Well, why would we seek to make money from these people? I don't get it.
Well, we're not making money from the university system. We're investing in people's ability to go to university. But the point I'm making, Nick, is that this isn't like a mortgage where when interest is higher, you pay more. The student loan system is, your repayments are solely dependent on how much you earn, not on what the interest rate is.
All right. There's no conversation at the moment about politics complete without the latest developments in the Mandelson affair, which takes us to Morgan McSweeney. Now that we learn that it was Mr. McSweeney who wanted to ensure that Peter Mandelson became our ambassador, although it was ultimately rubber-stamped, of course, by the King, it was, of course, endorsed by the Prime Minister. If Morgan McSweeney makes all the key decisions, what's the point of Sir Keir Starmer?
No, Morgan doesn't make all the key decisions. What he's said
ministers decide, so it is Sir Keir's decision then.
He offered advice, the decision was made, he's taking responsibility for the advice he offered. He's also,
the person who makes the decision takes no responsibility.
Nicky's also recognised, as we've seen throughout the years, that when the advisor becomes the story, it is probably right for that advisor to step back. Mm-hmm. Now, on the responsibility of the Prime Minister is taking responsibility. He has accepted. He's accepted that this was the wrong decision. He's apologised to Jeffrey Epstein's victims.
Do you know that's the best laugh I've had since Michael McIntyre on Saturday?
I don't think there's anything laughable about this. Well, I was in the middle of explaining to you how he's taking responsibility. First of all, as soon as it became clear what the extent of Peter Mandelson's relationship with Jeffrey Epstein, the Prime Minister fired him in the middle of the night. Secondly, he has apologised to Jeffrey Epstein's victims for making this decision. Thirdly, he's recognised that how we got here was both a function of the appointments process, which needs to be reformed, and he will take action on that.
It's also
a function, Nick, of the fact that...
So it's
Richard
Peter Mandelson's
Powell,
fault, it's well, Morgan
well,
McSweeney's
well,
fault,
frankly, it is Peter
it's
Mandelson's
the appointments fault. Procedure's fault, it's nothing to do with the... does he get through his... Everything conspires against him.
Nick,
he gets up in the morning, really, isn't it?
Nick, you're off on one, but I did just say that the Prime Minister has taken responsibility, he has apologised, and he is now taking responsibility for how we ensure that in this world, rich and powerful men who facilitate and take part in the abuse of women are not allowed to carry on doing that.
Well,
this is the Prime Minister, which has always put tackling violence against women and girls at the heart of his work.
And it's a government that came in that
promised... He did when he was the Director of Public Prosecutions, mm-hmm. when I was Home Secretary, mm-hmm. and he is doing that now.
Yes, the Director of Public Prosecutions, who can't work out when he's being lied to. It was also a government that came to power promising growth. The latest figures, when you came to power, the quarterly figure was 0.5. September to November last year, it was 0.1. So growth has gone backwards. And indeed, overnight, Jimmy Lai, the Hong Kong freedom campaigner, who Sir Keir lobbied for just a couple of weeks ago, he got 20 years in jail last night. So again, what is the point of Sir Keir Starmer?
Well, on the first, on the growth point, we have seen faster growth in this country than
many
others.
We're at 0.1%, Jackie.
Yeah, it's not fast enough, but it's faster than many other G7 countries, and that's exactly the reason why
the government... Well, they're at 0.0?
That's the reason why the government has been focused on, as we were talking about just over the weekend, actually, how we can get the skills necessary in order to do the big infrastructure projects, in order to grow the economy in the way in which we want to see that done. That's what I've been focusing on, as well as the other changes we've made as a government to promote growth. On the point about Jimmy Lai, the Prime Minister took the opportunity when he was in China to raise that case with President Xi. It is unacceptable what has happened to Jimmy Lai, and we will continue to make that point to the Chinese government.
Yes, OK. Finally, someone who you'll know well, Alistair Campbell, has been opining on why we find ourselves, both media and politics, in the current position. On the rest is politics.
Because of the nature of our politics, the quality, if you like, of our politicians and the political gene pool, the nihilism of much of the mainstream media, the anarchy of social media, with dissonance, hypocrisy, short-termism, naivety, industrialised rage and willful ignorance off the scale, that we're becoming almost ungovernable, that neither the parties nor the public are really prepared to face up to the big things that need to happen to turn this country around.
He's never one to hold back. Jackie Smith, Baroness Smith, is he right on what he says?
Look, he's right that this is a particularly difficult time to govern, given geopolitical pressures, given some of the other pressures that he was talking about. But that's why it's so important that a Prime Minister who came to power determined to change the country is supported to be able to do that by me, by my colleagues in government, and by colleagues in the Labour Party. The very worst thing to do at the moment would be to revert to what we've seen in recent years, where, you know, thinking that you can simply change a leader and you'll solve some of those challenges that Alistair was talking about is the answer. I don't believe it is. Changing the country is what we need to do, and we need to support the Prime Minister to do that.
Plenty of work going on to help unlock opportunities for young people across the country ahead of National Apprenticeship Week, as outlined by Jackie Baroness-Smith, Labour Peer and Skills Minister. Thank you for your time. You've taken us to 1 minute after eight. Let's get the latest LBC News headlines.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, Sir Keir Starmer will address Labour MPs later as he fights to save his job following the Lord Mandelson scandal. Sir Keir's chief of staff resigned yesterday, saying that he took full responsibility for hiring Mr Mandelson as US ambassador. There's been criticism from some backbenchers, though, who say the final decision was taken by the Prime Minister. But just speaking to Nick, the Cabinet Minister Baroness Smith rejected suggestions the PM is shifting the blame.
Prime Minister is taking responsibility. He has accepted. He has accepted.
Oh, for goodness sake, Jackie.
He's accepted that this was the wrong decision. He's apologised to Jeffrey Epstein's victims.
Do you know, that's the best laugh I've had since Michael McIntyre on Saturday.
Now he
is risible nonsense.
Well, I don't think there's anything laughable about this.
To say that he's taken responsibility.
I was in the middle of explaining to you how he's taking responsibility. First of all, as soon as it became clear the extent of Peter Mandelson's relationship with Jeffrey Epstein, the Prime Minister fired him.
Andrew Mountbatten Windsor is now being accused of sharing confidential trade information with Jeffrey Epstein. Newly released emails suggest he forwarded reports from his role as the UK's trade envoy. Andrew has consistently and strenuously denied any wrongdoing. Editor-at-large of the Mail on Sunday, Charlotte Griffith, has told Nick the new allegations are serious.
In early December 2010 and in early 2011, he forwarded two emails to Epstein. One said, "Made me think of you," which was an investment opportunity. And the one in December detailed important facts about reconstruction in the Helmand province, and obviously was offering Epstein an opportunity to invest in that as well.
A court in Hong Kong has sentenced the pro-democracy campaigner Jimmy Lai to 20 years in prison. The 78-year-old British national was convicted under China's national security law last year. He's always denied the charges against him. The Prince of Wales starts his first official visit to Saudi Arabia later. He's there at the request of the UK government. Prince William's expected to meet the kingdom's de facto leader, Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman.
And hundreds of flood warnings and alerts are in place this morning across the country with more rain forecast. Some areas haven't had a dry day since the start of the year. In the city, the FTSE 100 has just reopened at 10,369. It closed up 60 on Friday. The pound buys $1.36 and €1.15. LBC weather, cloudy with outbreaks of rain to start. Heavy rain will push into the southwest later, with more flooding possible later, a high of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search Don't Get Caught Out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning. It's 5 minutes after eight on Monday, February the 9th, coming up in this hour. Alistair Campbell has worked out. He's got the diagnosis as to why we would appear to be in such a mess or ungovernable. I've played it a couple of times. We'll play it again. Just played it to one of his former colleagues there, Jackie Smith. Baroness Smith will take your views on that. Of course, it all tracks back really now to one man, Sir Keir Starmer. So what would his own electorate make of him?
With the Prime Minister under mounting pressure, what do the people who sent him to Parliament in the first place, his constituents, make of his position? I'm LBC's Henry Riley in the seat of Holborn and St Pancras.
Let's come back to that interview with Baroness Smith, reminding you she's a skills minister. What does she make of the fact that it's clear that in some instances we're making money out of our students by charging them a higher interest rate?
If you benefit from a university degree, and people do in terms of higher pay throughout their lives, it's right that you should help to repay that with a considerable investment from government as well in your ability to do that.
Plus, coming up later in this hour, are you a regular dreamer? The unbelievable idea that you might be able to engineer your dreams, but actually getting inside your head, effectively. How might that work? It's later in the hour.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
I'd be surprised if for most of you the current political shambles that is the United Kingdom wasn't mentioned or referenced at some point during the weekend. If you were able to enjoy a couple of days off as I was, obviously if you were working, probably quite different. You've got other things to worry about. But if they were, there were probably some broad lines that were discussed among many of you. Not all, of course. I'm absolutely aware that there will still be some who think that Sir Keir Starmer's doing a crash job, bang-up job. But it probably was, God, I've never seen politicians like this before, or why are we in this mess, or it never used to be like this, did it, or those sort of themes. So what lies behind that? Well, let's remind you, I think we've played it at least twice. And here comes the third, it might be four, I don't know. These comments made by Alistair Campbell, of course, the great communications director for New Labour, and his Rest is Politics podcast. He was speaking yesterday.
Because of the nature of our politics, the quality, if you like, of our politicians and the political gene pool, the nihilism of much of the mainstream media, the anarchy of social media, with dissonance, hypocrisy, short-termism, naivety, industrialised rage, and willful ignorance off the scale, that we're becoming almost ungovernable, that neither the parties nor the public are really prepared to face up to the big things that need to happen to turn this country around.
So what did Skills Minister Jackie Baroness Smith make of that?
Look, he's right that this is a particularly difficult time to govern, given geopolitical pressures, given some of the other pressures that he was talking about. But that's why it's so important that a Prime Minister who came to power determined to change the country is supported to be able to do that by me, by my colleagues in government, and by colleagues in the Labour Party. The very worst thing to do at the moment would be to revert to what we've seen in recent years, where, you know, thinking that you can simply change a leader and you'll solve some of those challenges that Alistair was talking about is the answer. I don't believe it is. Change
changing the country is what we need to do, and we need to support the Prime Minister to do that.
Let's turn to Gitto Harry, former Downing Street Director of Communications, while Boris Johnson was Prime Minister. Joining me now, good to have you on, Gitto. So we've become almost ungovernable, a mix of the nihilism of the mainstream media, the anarchy of social media. Discuss. Good morning.
Good morning. I think the facts show we have become almost ungovernable. In 5 decades at the start of my life, we had 8 prime ministers. In the last decade, we've had 6 and we're heading for 7. So something is fundamentally wrong. But to moan about the press is always, I think, barking up the wrong tree, because what the press does is rightly put enormous scrutiny on the people who have the huge power and the resources to actually govern us. And the truth about Keir Starmer is that he never sealed the deal. He never persuaded us that Labour had actually changed and they had a proper plan for Britain. And in power, he's been utterly lousy, and he's finally got into a position where, not because of Peter Mandelson, but because of indecision, because of reversals, because of one U-turn after another, and a whole load of damaging decisions that have been made, he finally then has the final straw of something like Peter Mandelson, hanging out with one of the most notorious paedophiles of all time. And in full knowledge of that, he made him ambassador to Washington. It's no wonder that Keir Starmer is in problems. So whatever the bigger issues for Britain, it doesn't excuse Keir Starmer.
But let's back up a little, and we will come back to more what you said, Gitto. We can hardly say that things were all rosy on the good ship Sunak or the good ship Truss or even the good ship Boris.
No, and I think there are big problems. I think there's a problem that normal people would not want to go anywhere near politics because it's rough.
Mm.
And because the focus is often not on the decisions you take, but on, you know, where your kids go to school or who you go on holiday with. And, you know, that is something that we've got to address somehow. I think we should have fewer politicians and pay them more. But the biggest problem, and I think the really big problem we have at the moment, we spend so much on 2 things, on welfare benefits and on interest payments, not least to help sustain the welfare budget, that there is no money left, whether you're of the right and you'd like to cut taxes so you can grow the economy, or you're the left and you have a long, long list of things that you think the state could spend money on better than normal people can spend their own money. That's the difference between left and right. But either side in power, the Prime Minister is going to frustrate his or her backbenchers, because if we spend what we spend on welfare, there's no money for anything else.
Is the mainstream media nihilistic?
I think a lot of them are deeply moralistic. They expect better. They don't think that somebody like Peter Mandelson, as we've discovered recently, not only hung out with unsavory people, but was doing stuff that will now be the subject of a criminal investigation. You know, so thank God that we do have a media that holds us to account. I do think sometimes that the perspective can be, you know, shallow, and, you know, with some issues, they cover them without totally spelling out the backstory that may explain some things away. But that's for a decent politician to counter. And we have had successful politicians, you know, who've been able to confront the media, ride with the media, and actually break through to, you know, the voters beyond the media. And the truth is here that, again, what we have in Keir Starmer is somebody who's a lousy communicator. And that's like being a, you know, slow on the rugby field or unable to put in a tackle. You shouldn't be on the field.
I was just going, my final question, Gitto, to whom should we afford more sympathy, Sir Keir Starmer or Jack Morgan, the skipper of the Welsh Rugby? That was a good day on Saturday, wasn't it?
Well, I was in Twickenham. I suspect my experience was very different to yours, being a Welshman. It's a real shame that Jack Morgan was not on the field, because, you know,
he would have made the difference.
Well, do you know what? When you have a good leader, the whole team plays better, and that's what Labour MPs are thinking about at the moment. If they had the equivalent of Jack Morgan on the team as captain, I wonder whether that team could play better than they're playing at the moment.
You see how brilliantly he wove those 2 strands together. Only the great Gitto Harry, former Downing Street Director of Communications. Thanks for that, Gitto. 8:13. Listening, Kevin Schofield, political editor at HuffPost UK. Okay, Kevin, which pass do you want to have first? The one about mainstream media being nihilistic, or social media being anarchic, hypocritical, short-termism and naive? Morning.
Morning, Nick. Well, I don't want to talk about Scottish rugby either,
just to be
completely clear. I mean, I think it's the easiest thing in the world to criticise the media It's an old song that Alistair Campbell has played many, many times. His protege, Tom Baldwin, who was spin doctor, a former journalist who was spin doctor for Ed Miliband, he sings the same song too, that it's all the media's fault. Mm-hmm. It wasn't the media who appointed Peter Mandelson to be the US ambassador. It wasn't the media who was aware of his connections with Jeffrey Epstein and still went ahead and gave him the post. It was the media that helped to expose the fact that that happened and brought it into the daylight. So I have a little bit of sympathy on the social media side. I know it is much more difficult, I think, being a politician now. They're consistently having to bring out content and videos, etc., etc. But that comes with the territory, and they know what they're signing up for. And I think it's just really lazy to say that it's all the media's fault when we expose the bad behaviour of senior politicians.
It's reported Sir Keir meets with his colleagues later today. What's he need to say, Kevin?
Well, yes, he's going to basically, it's going to be a bit of a mea culpa. He's going to say he's very angry at Peter Mandelson. He will take some ownership of what happened. He will pledge to clean up politics, as you would, I suppose, inevitably expect him to do. Whether it's enough to satisfy the Parliamentary Labour Party of MPs and peers, I'm not convinced. They were angry before. They're even angrier now, and probably even angrier still, having spent the weekend being shouted at on the doorstep by their voters. So I think he's in for a pretty rough ride.
Kevin, thanks. Not better luck next week. It's the Calcutta Cup. Sorry, you've got one more week of pain to take, Kevin. Then may you get a few points and tries behind you. Kevin Schofield, political editor at HuffPost UK. Calls coming in on this. Angela, you'll be the first caller. Also, coming up after the news, to read or not to read. Now, for my older listeners... have led to sales of Wuthering Heights rising by 469% ahead, of course, of that movie. But for our younger readers, I'm afraid, according to Tracy Beaker creator Dame Jacqueline Wilson, reading is in peril because children see it as boring. How to lift the boredom out of books by The Bard and others. 8:15 LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
Speaking to Nick Ferrari at breakfast, the cabinet minister has rejected claims Sir Keir Starmer's shirking responsibility over the Lord Mandelson scandal. Andrew Mountbatten Windsor has now been accused of sharing confidential trade information with Jeffrey Epstein, and a court in Hong Kong has sentenced the pro-democracy campaigner Jimmy Lai to 20 years in prison. LBC weather, cloudy with outbreaks of rain to start. Heavy rain will push into the southwest later, a high of 11 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Severe delays on the M25 clockwise from junction 16 at the M40 towards junction 18 at Chorley Wood. It was after an accident that happened earlier. Also on the M25, there were clockwise queues to junction 5 at the M26. That was also after an accident that happened earlier, but all the lanes are now back open. Delays on the M11 southbound to junction 7 at Harlow, there's been an accident. And northbound on the M1, there are severe delays to junction 13 at Bedford. Some emergency works are having to take place and two lanes are closed. On the trains, London Northwestern and Avanti West Coast services are delayed from Milton Keynes Central to Euston. That's all down to a track problem.
This is LBC.
Here at South Eastern, we know a bit of good news goes a long way, however big or small it may be. So we wanted to let you know that we're continuing to make improvements across our network. From sprucing up our trains and many of our stations to make your journey nicer, to improving the network to minimise delays, we're investing in making your journey with us better, one step at a time. Find out more at southeasternrailway.co.uk/betterjourneys.
Call Nick Ferrari now, 0345 6060973, LBC.
To be or not to be.
Right now we're offering a range of incentives across Audi models.
That is the...
But only until the 28th of February.
The,
So stop whatever you're doing.
I'll be right back. Just carry on without me.
And find yours online or at your local Audi centre. Audi. Vorsprung der Technik. Terms and conditions apply. Selected models, retail customers and participating Audi centres only.
So, what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 991234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
Donations to British Heart Foundation fund scientific research that can help save lives. People like Joe, who's pitching his next big business plan. Maria, who's sending out her wedding invitations. And Jack, who's just being a teenager again. Because when you donate, you fund more than just science. You help save lives. British Heart Foundation funds research that aims to cure inherited heart muscle diseases. But our work is not done. Donate now at bhf.org.uk and keep us beating.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
19 minutes after 8. Well, fortunately, Alistair Campbell has opined on what the problem is with this country. It's the nihilism of people such as me, the mainstream media, and the anarchy of social media with dissonance, hypocrisy and naivety. Angela's in Hull. Your reaction. Angela, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. I think he's just a big hypocrite, Alistair Campbell. I can only imagine the glee that he would have been jumping up and down with had this happened on the Conservatives' yep. watch. And it's people like him that are the problem, and he's...
It's people like Alistair who are the problem, do you say?
Yeah, and he's okay. blaming the media and social media as though they're the problem. Well, unfortunately, every role in the country now, whatever job you're in, has to deal with the scrutiny that social media brings, because that's the world we live in now. So they're not, politicians aren't immune to that, nor should they be. If anything, they should be under more scrutiny than most roles. And the other thing that I wanted to say is that nobody's come out and said, well, you know, police are under more scrutiny because of social media. There's lots of rules that are under more scrutiny because of social media, and it doesn't seem to bother the government or people like him. He's only now chipping in because it's politically, it's not serving his purpose.
Well, I think, Angela, it's worth noting, of course, along with Peter Mandelson, the two of them probably invented smear tactics, probably invented the idea of to this level of counter-briefing. Remember, it was on their watch that someone said it was a good day to bury bad news, that day being the day of the 9/11 attack. So that does possibly speak to the fact that they made politics a contact sport. Angela?
Exactly. He and his ilk are part of the problem that have led to where we are now, which unfortunately is a country that he is right about something is becoming ungovernable, but that isn't at the door of the poor politicians or the media or social media. It's because of people like him.
Angela, thank you. You laid your views out very cogently. We'll take more calls on that in a moment. Alex, sorry, I hope you can hold, but I have got someone I want to turn to about a story that we've also been discussing, which was given extra relevance by the front page of the Sunday Times yesterday, if you're able to see that, with an ex-education secretary, Alan Johnson. I think it's fair to say universally admired within the Labour movement, and that's quite difficult at the moment, but he would have more support than he would have, I would say, negative sentiments, and he agreeing that the system at the moment cannot be wrong. You may recall we tackled this with Sir Nick Clegg a couple of weeks ago, and I cited incidents of, in fact, I have colleagues who have debt in the region of £70,000 to £80,000 from their university tuition, and also, which I find absolutely appalling, charged at a certain rate of interest which is higher than the other. I'll explain more in a moment. But in the previous hour, I put some of this to Labour peer and Skills Minister. She was on talking about apprenticeships and the aim to make apprenticeships on the same level as university tuition, and good luck to that idea. But she continued to defend the current system.
Well, I get that people are worried about the cost of living pressures that they're facing, including for those people who are earning above the threshold, how much they're repaying in terms of their student debt. There are a whole range of ways that we can tackle that. One, by making sure the student loan system is fair for those on lower incomes, and in fact those who haven't been to university at all, but also by tackling things like childcare costs, the costs of housing, how much it costs to send your children to school. All of those things are action this government is taking. But if you benefit from a university degree, and people do in terms of higher pay throughout their lives, it's right that you should help to repay that with a considerable investment from government as well in your ability
to do
that. Why
can't they pay back at CPI, which always, nearly always, university is lower than RPI? Well, why would we seek to make money from these people? I don't get it.
Well, we're not making money from the university system. We're investing in people's ability to go to university. But the point I'm making, Nick, is that this isn't like a mortgage where when interest is higher, you pay more. The student loan system is, your repayments are solely dependent on how much you earn, not on what the interest rate is.
In the studio with me, Ollie Dugmore, who's executive editor of The New Statesman, who's been trying to make the point of campaign over this for some time. Ollie, talk us a little bit about your personal situation. I know you've spoken of that.
Morning, Nick. Morning. Yeah. So, my study at university is supposed to have cost me £37,500. That's £9,000 a year for tuition, plus a loan on top of that to cover sort of, you know, accommodation costs and the like. I also got a grant, which has since been cut, but my cohort, 2012, the first generation to pay £9,000 a year, that's what I got. In the intervening period, the interest that I've been charged is £32,000. So it's effectively doubled in a little under 15 years. Now, I wanted to go to university. I thought it would give me skills to get a good career, help me get on in life, and the graduate premium is a real thing. But when it comes to calculating the interest on that loan, you spoke to Jackie Smith then about RPI versus CPI. It's all very well and good for the government to prefer to use CPI unless they're taking my money, in which case they prefer RPI because it's a higher measure of inflation. There's also what I think you could sort of pithily describe as a reverse triple lock. So if you earn more, you're charged more interest. Now, typically, obviously, financial institutions, I'm sure sort of David Buick, Christian May, whoever it is on this show, if you're a high earner, someone like a bank giving you a loan, whoever it is, if you do well, they'll quite often offer you a slightly more favourable interest rate because they think, you know what, this guy's going to pay it back. We want to keep his customer and we'd like him to come back to us in the future. It's not the case with student loans.
Seems to be the other way around.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, this guy's well paid, so he's probably going to pay off his loan a little bit quicker. Let's charge him a bit more interest to prolong this whole process out. So that's my personal situation.
What do you see as a solution?
There are several things you could look at. Changing from RPI to CPI is one.
That would help a little. I mean, typically it's about 1.5% difference in the... So it's 4.5 place, 5.0, whatever, roughly.
Obviously played out over, you know, the decades...
It's a heck of a lot of money.
Yeah, the decades long term. You know, these Plan 5 loans, the most recent cohort, the expiry date on their loan is 40 years, so they're going to be paying into their 60s. You could have an interest cap. You could say we're going to permit interest up to, let's say, an extra £5,000, or we're just going to cap it at 1% over the whole term. That would be one solution too. I really get animated about this, Nick, because the most common living arrangement for young men in this country, men my age, under 35, used to be living with a spouse and possibly with a child. It is now living with their parents. And so if we're talking about getting these young guys out into the world, owning a home, meeting a romantic partner, what would 9% of their income, because that's what they have to pay, do for furthering that aim? Now, if we don't want them to pay it, somebody else is going to have to. You could look at all across society, right? And I'm sure if I said, in fact, I'll say it now just to get the phone board going. If I said, you know what, the top rate of tax should increase by 9%, people would have something to say about it, wouldn't they? Mm-hmm. Additionally, Nick, you know, a lot of employers stipulate for their entry-level jobs, people who are starting out in the job market, they say, you need a degree, it's a requirement to apply for this. Not the worst idea in the world to say, if you want to apply that requirement, you're going to have to contribute a little bit towards the education system. So there are different things we can look at here. On the most sort of fundamental, basic principles, I think that education, having an educated workforce, is to the benefit of all of society. Mm-hmm. And therefore, central government, the broader tax base, contributing to that to a greater extent than they currently do, is something that I support.
Lastly, how significant or otherwise is what Alan Johnson was saying yesterday and was claimed before and quoted yesterday in the Sunday Times?
Yeah, look, I think it's a start. I think it's a move. And clearly there is now a greater sense of debate. I think people can see if we're talking about stroking our chins, wondering about the birth rate, if we're trying to help younger people onto the housing ladder, we've got to do something about this. We've got to visit the interest rates. We've got to look at, I mean, the more radical idea would possibly be forgiving some of the interest that's being charged.
Yes.
But clearly the Labour Party is moving in that direction, and I think we should applaud it.
And presumably there'll be more in The New Statesman. If people want to learn more, should they keep an eye on you write regularly on this?
Absolutely, absolutely. There's possibly a cover story in the works, Nick. Keep your eye out.
That's one journalist to another. I think there is. Ollie Dugmore, look out for that name, Dugmore. Ollie Dugmore, Executive Editor of The New Statesman. Thanks for coming by the studio, Ollie. Good luck with the campaigning you're doing. 8:27. Alex in Whetstone. We may well come towards calls on that, but Alex, you've been hanging on the line to talk about Alistair Campbell's view on why we find ourselves where we are. Morning.
Morning, Nick. Well, I was going to say that we need a free press, and I don't think that we can blame the press for what's going on at the moment. And as for social media, people have to just check other sources and use their minds to work out what's right and what's wrong. So,
work out, sir? Where do you turn to learn what's right and what's wrong? A LBC, a newspaper, social media, Sky? I don't know. Where do you go?
Well, everything you said, plus people like Laura Kunzberg. Mm-hmm. You know, there's loads of different sources of information out there, and you've got to take them all, and then you can make a judgment yourself. So, I don't believe that you can blame the media for
lastly,
what's going on now.
Are we virtually ungovernable? The country virtually ungovernable?
Well,
I don't know. I was talking to my mum at the weekend. Love you, mum. she was saying that she missed Rory Stewart, and it made me think about people like Chuka Yamuna and David Miller Band and
that sort of generation.
Yeah, we've lost a few along the way.
What
I can just say, I'd like to make the point about what Keir could do now is he could make sure that there's a good transition. He could change the NEC board so that Andy Burnham doesn't get blocked next time, because obviously Angela can't do anything at the moment with her tax problems.
Okay. I wonder, what's Mum's first name, so we can say hello to Mum?
She's called Hanny.
Hey, Hanny, look after yourself. That's big love from Alex. Thanks for that. Let's get some social media on. Sorry if you're holding the calls, but I haven't done this. Mike in Crawley, political responsibility. Advisors advise, politicians decide. McSweeney is unelected, Starmer is elected. How can an unelected official take responsibility for a political choice? The current problem with politics is the power of an unelected people in the shadows. Patrick Abrams says, you're so wrong about Sir Keir. He's turned a lot of bad situations around since he became the PM. You're so unfair with your comments. Everything he touches is not destroyed. No, of course it's not. Of course it's not. But by and large, the track record and 14 U-turns, Patrick, seriously, what does that tell you? Meanwhile, Mark in Leeds says, you asked Sir Keir Starmer, what's the point? There is a point to Starmer. He never answers the questions, he blames everyone else for his mistakes, and he can't control his backbenchers. But there is a good thing, and it's making things rhyme with his name. Two-tier, free gear, no idea, Farmer Harmer. The list goes on. Well, that is the point of Sir Keir Starmer. He's got a funny name, so we'll keep it going. But if he's not in place and they do change the name on the door or above number 10, who are the runners and riders?
The big question concerning the Prime Minister is how long can he hold on? I'm David Williams of the Rank Group, and I'll be bringing Nick all the betting news surrounding Starmer and what might be next.
8:30, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrara on LBC News. Dominic Ellis.
A cabinet minister has rejected claims that Sir Keir Starmer's not taking responsibility for the Lord Mandelson scandal. Baroness Smith has told Nick that Sir Keir Starmer is determined to overhaul the vetting system for senior appointments. Andrew Mountbatten Windsor is now accused of sharing confidential trade information with Jeffrey Epstein. Newly released emails suggest he forwarded reports from his role as the UK's trade envoy in 2010 and 2011. And the Hong Kong media tycoon and pro-democracy campaigner Jimmy Lai has been sentenced to 20 years in prison. The 78-year-old, who's a British citizen, was found guilty of foreign collusion and sedition. LBC weather, cloudy with outbreaks of rain to start. Some heavy rain pushing into the southwest by the afternoon. A high of 11 degrees.
LBC. At Ocado, you'll save 25% on your first shop and get free delivery. Which means if you were to buy a four-cheese pizza, you'd basically be getting one of the cheeses for free. Save and splurge at Ocado, the online supermarket. Geographical and other restrictions. Minimum spend £60 and charges apply. New customers only. Maximum saving £20. Terms at Ocado.com.
At TfL, we're helping make roads safer. We're continuing to roll out lower speed limits because 20 miles per hour roads have already seen 24% fewer collisions causing death or serious injury. We're also improving junctions to help keep you safe and improving visibility for our bus drivers with new wing mirror cameras. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Comparison of collisions data before and after implementation of 20 miles per hour speed limit.
Donations to British Heart Foundation fund scientific research that can help save lives. People like Joe, who's pitching his next big business plan. Maria, who's sending out her wedding invitations. And Jack, who's just being a teenager again. Because when you donate, you fund more than just science. You help save lives. British Heart Foundation funds research that aims to cure inherited heart muscle diseases. But our work is not done. Donate now at bhf.org.uk and keep us beating.
Selling your car can be super simple. If you choose We Buy Any Car, because they sort out any outstanding finance for you. Just bring along your final settlement agreement. If only they could make parallel parking simpler.
To the right a bit, mate. Yeah, back. Back a bit. Bit more. Oh. Nope, too far.
We Buy Any Car. Selling made simple. To sell your car today, enter your reg number now at webuyanycar.com.
Bring your pensions together with PensionBee and take control of your retirement. Because when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. When investing, your capital is at risk.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
8:33, coming to the very serious subject of student loans, but I've got this from Mark in Leeds. I didn't say that. Have you read another comment? Censorship. Mark, has it occurred to you there could be two Marks in Leeds? It's quite a big city. So the fact that I didn't read yours and I read the other Mark in Leeds talking about the only point of Keir Starmer is because he's got a name you can rhyme with. I think it was a different Mark. And by the way, Mark, his Mark is with a C and yours is with a K. So relax, chill a little as we talk about student loans. We're talking, of course, with that Ollie Dugmore, the journalist who's raised this issue, and in some instances, these poor individuals... Well, in his case, he decided to share the figures. So he came out with £37,500. With the addition of interest, that's an extra £32,000. Mark's in Brighton on this. Mark, what do you want to say? Good morning.
Good morning. That politician you just had on that you were questioning, talking absolute nonsense.
Jackie Smith, you mean the woman with whom I was speaking, Jackie Smith?
Right.
Yeah, go ahead. Right. Why do you say that's nonsense?
Well, I don't see what government investment, and by the figures we've just had, these loans that are written off after so many, it makes it like the money disappears. The taxpayer is going to pay that loan off. A very inflated rate of inflation. Rather than common sense, what skills do we need?
Right.
We will pay for that education for those skills.
Yeah, but who's going to determine that? Because the skills that we might need this year, skills we don't recognise now, we're going to need in a decade.
Well,
and you can't play catch-up.
Tell us what the climate's going to be like in 50 years'
time.
But
you don't want a government decreeing what subjects it's going to offer tuition for, do you?
Well, look at the situation we're in now, Nick. We're importing professionals from abroad because no one had the idea of social planning that we're going to need more doctors. It's not rocket science. People can work out what demand society is going to actually need. And then think of it this way.
But I think it's one, if somebody wants to study, I don't know, ancient Cornish land mining, I think it's great that we can do that. If that's what interests him or her.
But is that really going to help the general populace?
Why does everything have to help? Why?
Because the populace is paying for it.
That's almost like communism. You're only going to do jobs we want you to do. That's virtual communism.
Don't you think it makes sense that if 10 years ago we were helping people to become doctors...
Well, people will always want to become... Fortunately, thank God, people will always want to become doctors, fortunately.
Yeah, but that debt, you see, the thing is, that £9,000 that doesn't get paid off becomes a lot more that the public are going to have to pay in years to come.
Well, the key is, of course, as we heard from Ollie Dugmore's example, of course, it's he that is paying it off, albeit that it's now approaching in total some £70,000. Mark, it's interesting views, and we'll take more on that in a moment, and I'm grateful for your input. Let's see what others make of it. But at 8:36, let's say, because we've got so much going on, and political anarchy, and governments falling, and that ghastly Jeffrey Epstein, have you had a dream lately? And if so, what do you dream about? What about the idea, as was written in one newspaper last week, the iNewspaper, that it could actually possibly get inside your head with dream engineering? Well, this all comes from work done by Dr. Karen Konkoli, who's a neuroscientist at Northwestern University in Illinois, who can talk about dream engineering and joins me now. Doctor, thanks for coming on the show, and assuming you are in Illinois, you stayed up late into the night or early in the morning, and I do appreciate it. So you've had no dreams of late, but why do we dream? Good morning.
Hi, thanks for having me. Yeah, there's so many different ideas about why people dream. Maybe it's to help integrate what you learned with your existing basis of knowledge. Maybe it's to help regulate your emotions. Maybe it's for creative problem solving. So many theories. And yet what we really need is tools to test these theories.
So what are those tools? And how are you going to get inside my head and engineer my dreams? Tell me how that's done, Karen.
Yeah, well, we're trying to be really sensitive about how we really do it. But for science, what's really helpful is if you can actually change a dream as it's occurring. Because for many other types of science, you know, you need to manipulate your variable in order to test what it's doing. And so dreams historically have been really difficult to change. You know, you can set an intention before sleep, but depending on, you know, so many factors, people tend to dream about what they care about instead of what, you know, we're trying to test. And so the point isn't to change everyone's dreams all the time. The point is to just change dreams occasionally so that we can understand what they're doing so that people can value their dreams more.
Tell us what you did with some, tell us what you and your colleagues did with some volunteers.
Yeah. So what we did is we recruited lucid dreamers, who are people who are aware that they're dreaming while remaining asleep. And so they can already control their dreams to some extent. And then we used two-way communication, where the dreamers, before sleep, they worked on these brain teaser puzzles, and each puzzle was linked with a sound. And they failed to solve these puzzles before sleep. And then in their dreams, and especially if they were lucid dreaming, we played the soundtracks associated with only some of the unsolved puzzles, but not others. And so what this did is it helped the dreamers remember to work on specific puzzles while they were dreaming, but not others.
Does everyone dream?
In my opinion, I think that everyone is pretty much dreaming, or at least having some kind of thoughts or thinking. You know, people are having experiences all night long, and we mostly just forget.
Doctor, if there's a certain time of your life, maybe you've lost a relative, maybe you're getting divorced, maybe you've got job pressures, are you more or less likely to dream, and more or less likely to feature those elements in your dreaming?
Yeah, people's dreams really face a lot, like they really incorporate a lot of the current concerns that people have in their lives. That's another theory of dreaming, that dreams are continuous with those current concerns, and that they can help process them. I think there's one study that people who are dreaming a lot more of their divorce actually like feel better about it a year later. So it might be helping them process those difficult emotions.
I'm pretty certain, Karen, I dream in color rather than black and white. Am I right?
Yes. The origin of the black and white dreaming, I believe, is kind of linked to black and white television. So when there was a lot of that, there was a lot of black and white dreaming. And now that there's less, there's a lot less black and white dreaming.
So you're a neuroscientist. You're in this field. When you wake up most mornings, do you kind of analyze your dreams and those of your partner or husband or wife, whatever it might be? Or do you, is it just work? I mean, do you take your work home is what I'm trying to politely say, Karen.
I totally do. Not only do I analyze my own dreams and his, but I also try to play flashing lights and sound to him while he sleeps sometimes.
Oh my God, what a nightmare. He's a very patient man. And ultimately, where do you see dream engineering, if I can use that expression, where do you see it going? What do you want to achieve?
Yeah, for me, the biggest goal is to just really test all those theories of why we dream so that people can value their dreams. So scientists can say, hey, these are the five functions of dreaming, and we really need to sleep in the morning. Maybe we need to remember them. We need to really care about this as part of our mental health. But it's also a really great opportunity to intervene when dreams might go awry. Like in a lot of mental health disorders, dreams are changed. And so dream engineering could be a really nice target for symptoms of different mental health disorders. And it could help with, you know, with everyday problems such as creative problem solving.
Last question is, what is it, about 2:45 in the morning for you? 1:45 in the morning?
I am actually in Hawaii, so it's 10:41 p.m.
Oh, okay, so you're about somewhere. I haven't interrupted your sleep. That's cool. Well, yeah, happy sweet dreams, as they say. Sweet dreams, Doctor. Thank you for your time. Dr. Karen Konkoli, neuroscientist at Northwestern University in Illinois, although currently in Hawaii, talking about dream engineering. You've got views on that, give me a call. But it's student loans you want to talk about. At least it lifted the mood briefly. 8:42. Sanjay's in Harrow. We're talking about one of your children. Is that right? Good morning.
Yeah, very good morning, Nick. Yes, I'm talking about my daughter. She completed her study in Cambridge University, and it was a 6 years medicine course.
Did you say, sir?
Yeah, 6 years,
Lord,
yes.
Lord. What's she, a doctor or something? An architect?
Currently she is a pediatrician registrar. Yeah, she started in a plan two of student loan in year 2014, and that completed in 2020, just before COVID.
Right.
And since day one, she is working with NHS.
Do you mind if I ask how much her tuition cost and her loan? You don't have to tell me these figures if you don't want to, obviously.
No, I can explain, because last week on Saturday only, we both were together, and I read about this news going on in the media since last few days. We were just discussing, and she logged in her account, and we really gone through it. So I have a very fresh figures in my mind, which are very accurate.
Okay,
so I don't mind sharing that.
What are they then?
Yeah, she started with a 9K every year for education, for a tuition fee, as well as we as a parent, we take a blame very honestly. We could not afford her living, so we borrowed another 4.5 or 5K every year, whatever
60.
Was the eligibility for her for her livings in Cambridge at that time.
So that's about 60K, so roughly. Is it roughly?
Yeah. It was about 65K at end of the... 65.
Yeah.
Even plus, I remember very well. And today, her debt is outstanding 84K. She is contributing every year. The plan two is not just the RPI. I think the plan two, which is started in 2014, is where you are paying, say, 3.5% something, plus RPI.
Do you know the level of payment she makes each year? How much?
Yeah, so now from her recent pay slips, she is paying every month roughly £350 in a student loan debt.
Right.
But still, she is hardly able to pay the interest only of the current situation.
From a very, very, very top of the head standpoint, she's just about covering the interest, or a few quid either way, I guess, roughly.
Yeah. And her outstanding today is mounted from 65 plus to nearly 84K. So even the registrar, as on today, is unable to pay. She is a young girl. She engaged with a charming boy, but she is unable to afford the marriage, unable to afford the housing or even the flat. They are paying rent together.
I must leave it there, Sanjay, and I'm very grateful for sharing in such detail, because I think for those who are saying, oh, well, they get themselves this, they decide to do this, this is exactly the sort of person we want, like your daughter, who's chosen to be a doctor, and I think she said she's a paediatrician, and she's managing, she's just about keeping pace with the interest on that loan. Look, come on, you can see from another planet that this isn't right, surely. We'll take some more calls on that. Also coming up later in the show, with his job under considerable pressure, what do his constituents make of their MP?
Not very good at all, mate.
Do you think he's a good MP?
No, not at all.
What would your advice be to him now?
Step down, to be honest with you. Move aside, really, because he ain't really done anything for the country, has he, so far?
Oh, that MP. Those are the good folk of Holborn and St Pancras, their MP. That would be Sir Keir Starmer. It's 8:45, LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
Speaking to Nick, a cabinet minister has rejected claims that Sir Keir Starmer's not taking responsibility for the Lord Mandelson scandal. Andrew Mountbatten Windsor is now being accused of sharing confidential trade information with Jeffrey Epstein, and a court in Hong Kong has sentenced the pro-democracy campaigner Jimmy Lai to 20 years in prison. LBC weather, cloudy with outbreaks of rain to start. Heavy rain will push into the southwest by the afternoon, a high of 11 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Delays on the M1 northbound up to junction 13 at Bedford. Just after the junction, some emergency works are taking place and two lanes are closed. There are delays on the M25 anti-clockwise for about 2 miles to junction 27 at the M11, and that was after a car broke down earlier. Long delays on the A13 at westbound to the M25 junction. Two lorries have broken down on that stretch, and also delays in Battersea because Albert Bridge has had to be closed in both directions because of emergency repair works. So lots of traffic having to use Battersea and Chelsea bridges instead, and that's causing severe delays. And on the train, Southern are delayed between Shepherd's Bush and Watford Junction.
This is LBC.
So, you're geared up for this Making Tax Digital thing?
Sure, I just need some new mud boards, bag of cavity tyres and a couple of lintels.
Hey, MTD, mate, digital taxes.
Mm-hmm, it's an extension down Station Road on the corner.
Dave, digital taxes, mate.
Yeah, I probably will need some 2x4s. I've got to take the van in for a new fan belt, squeaky.
Hey, Making Tax Digital, Dave.
Avoiding MTD. Sage makes tax simpler for sole traders. Search Sage MTD to get your free software today.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. This is LBC.
Sunlight's guaranteed over 50 plan gave confidence to Jane and Chris. With their insurance sorted, they're becoming naturists. Cutting loose in their birthday suits, feeling elegant and free. But when they answered the door, the postman saw more than he expected to see.
Sunlight, a little confidence goes a long way. No medical questions and a cash payout. Search Sun Life Cover today.
Premiums paid could exceed the payout. Full cover after 1 year. Ages 49 to 85.
For the nappies, peekaboos and tea parties. Mess, tantrums and sleepless nights. All those yo-yos, action figures and shinies. Lifts to mates, lifts to parties, lifts everywhere. For each and every one of those teenage years. Let's be honest. You probably owe your parents one. So tell them about pension credit. It could boost their pension income by an average of over £4,000 a year. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
At Ocado, you'll save 25% on your first shop and get free delivery. Which means if you were to buy a four-cheese pizza, you'd basically be getting one of the cheeses for free. Save and splurge at Ocado, the online supermarket. Geographical and other restrictions. Minimum spend £60 and charges apply. New customers only. Maximum saving £20. Terms at Ocado.com.
Thanks for the key deliverables, David. Now, who'd like to... That's brilliant. So, okay, sales targets. Are we hitting
the dance floor? Anytime! Woo-hoo!
There's more than one you, and with Specsavers 2 for 1, you can choose glasses for at least two use. From £70 with standard single vision lenses.
Nice moves, David!
Book an appointment at specsavers.co.uk. Conditions apply.
I'm Leah, and this is my NHS story. I could just feel my body didn't feel right, and my GP referred me to CDC. Had some blood tests done, and within 24 hours, I had my results. And that just reassured me that I was being taken seriously.
The government is opening new community diagnostic centres, with many already available 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, so the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS Fit for the Future. Available England-wide.
This is LBC. Message Nick Ferrari on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60 973.
10 minutes before nine, we'll continue to tap into the anger concerning student loans. Sometimes it's for you. In other cases, we've just heard from Sanjay, it's for his daughter, who, thank the Lord, has just completed training as a doctor, but is £84,000 in debt. And then, of course, we'll get back to matters political. And we're on the streets, of course, of St Pancras in North London, finding out what his, Sakir's own constituents make of him. And even that's not going very well. So let's stick with that conversation now. Bring in for some views Kevin Hollenrake, who is a Conservative MP and indeed chairs the Conservative Party. Thanks for coming on, Chairman. As a veteran political watcher, I'm not going to ask you if that's all right, Chairman, what you want to happen next. I'm going to ask you what you think might happen next as the tenure of the PM. Morning to you.
Bye, Nick. I think he'll be gone by May, June. I think that's what will happen. Keir Starmer's position is untenable. I think when you've lost the confidence of your backbenchers, crucially, and also many of your ministers, you can't carry on. And it's not just about the latest stuff on Mandelson, is it? It's been a series of poor judgments from the Prime Minister. Weakness. Politics doesn't like a weak leader. Never has done. And I think he's the weakest we've seen for a long, long time. So I think he knows his time is up. I think he's probably slightly benefiting from the fact that lots of his potential challengers are not quite ready yet. So it'll take a few weeks for them to get ready. But once they are, once we've had probably the local election, the by-election, and then the local elections out the way in May, I think he'll be gone shortly after.
How much is the real danger, Mr. Hollenrake? You're on what's called the media round today for the Conservatives, and my listeners are familiar, that's what it means. Yesterday's media round was Pat McFadden, who was saying, oh no, Morgan McSweeney can stay, and that's fine, it'll make no difference. 4 hours later, he's gone. If you continually ask senior members of your party to go out and defend what they know to be indefensible, but they'll play the team game, and they'll say the right things, and then they get in their cars and they go home, and dear God, the position they've been... Surely then, that is when confidence is shattered.
Yeah, that's right, dead right. I watched Pat McFadden yesterday. I didn't watch him, I listened to him on your programme, but on the BBC with Laura Koonsberg, and he looked pretty deflated. Mm. And he's been a key lieutenant to the Prime Minister. And I think at one point he said, if the Prime Minister continues, and I think that was pretty telling. It was, you could say it was a slip of the tongue, but I don't think it was. I think he understood the peril the Prime Minister's in, and I think it's even more perilous now that Morgan McSweeney has gone.
Last question. If we set the royal involvement to one side, move that apart, and just stay with political matters, i.e. the appointment of Mandelson, Mandelson's alleged links as regards financial information, what's shocked you the most?
I think definitely his leaking of sensitive things going on in government with a person that could benefit from financially. I mean, telling Epstein, for example, that the government was about to announce, or the EU was about to announce a £500 billion bailout of the euro, which anybody who's in the financial world could benefit from. At a time when businesses like mine, I was in business at the time, was close to going under, and you know, hundreds of thousands of businesses in the same situation, and people were losing their jobs. Almost 4 million jobs were lost. That he was looking to benefit his best pal and benefit financially probably from that is utterly shocking.
Grateful for your time. Kevin Hollenrake chairs the Conservative Party. 9:06. Coming back to you for more of your views on student loans. Who's been holding the longest? Rod, coming to you. I just want to read this. We're talking about dreams and a possible dream engineering. Anne says, with regards to dreams, I often fall asleep listening to the radio in LBC, and the presenter at that time frequently features in my dreams. I've met Clive Bull in a swimming pool and Ian Payne a number of times in different places. It's all very decent. And I suggest that was the stuff of nightmares, suddenly walking into Clive Bullitt or swimming into Clive in a swimming pool. Rod's in Halifax. Rod, what are you going to tell me about student loans? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. What an honour to talk to you.
Oh, my goodness. It is. The honour's completely the other way around, so it's great,
Nick,
to have you on. Come on.
I went to university in 2000.
Uh-huh.
Finish a 4 years degree with zero debt and 4 years experience. I actually finished my degree with some extra money in my pocket.
Okay.
And in the last weeks, I've been hearing the students, I feel so sorry for
them.
That's
awful.
It's because the model is wrong, Nick. I think that there is it needs to have an option to have a different model.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll tell you, I graduated in Brazil.
Yeah.
So basically, I used to go to work in the morning and go to university in the evenings.
Right.
Yes, people might argue is not great for academic reasons, but I got a job, I work full-time, leave my job and go to uni from 7:30 p.m. until 10:30 in the evening.
Would you have got that job without your degree?
No. No, I wouldn't, because the companies need to change. Again, is the whole model is wrong. So there is a lot of programs for students who are just graduating on the first year or just joining university.
Mm-hmm.
So because you are a subscriber to university, the company will take you as a promising talent and will work with you. So you need to be subscribed to university. You have to commit with a university degree. So that's what happened with me. I joined a very good company, a big American company expanding in Brazil. And I was studying business administration. And it was hard, Nick. It was hard. You have to work all day. And then at the end of the day, you need to find energy to go for your classes, to read your books, and to do your exams.
And you did it. And look where you are now. Rod, thanks for hanging on the line. Please excuse me for moving on. It's lots of people want to have their say. Thanks, Rod. Matt in Aldershot. Matt, what is your story? Good morning.
Matt. Hi, Nick.
Hello. Go ahead.
I'm just calling because I didn't go to university.
Mm-hmm.
I made the decision in 2017 not to attend university after receiving some offers.
Mm-hmm.
I decided not to do it purely, you know, for the reason of student debt, as I didn't want to go into debt and I didn't mm-hmm. value the degree enough to go into debt. And I also thought it wasn't particularly fair that most students never repay their loan in full,
mm-hmm.
And that tax burden just falls on non-graduates as evenly as it does on to graduates. Why should someone who's gone and taken on an apprenticeship, which the Labour government claimed to be trying to incentivise, be paying the student loan of someone that's decided to study politics or business?
Hang on, if we're not careful, we won't have doctors.
In their profession.
We won't have doctors, Matt, if we don't help fund them.
So doctors or university medical degrees are some of the most competitive. I don't think that's that's ever going to be an issue.
Well, I mean, if we listen to
when they graduate,
Sanjay's daughter.
They will receive a very high.
Sanjay's daughter trained for 6 years and with living costs was a total of £65,000. Now, with interest, it's at £84,000. The young woman, who is a doctor, pays back at the rate of about £350 per month. She's just about covering the interest, maybe a few quid up, a few quid down. We're not going to get a generation of doctors, engineers, lawyers. Well, actually, that'd be quite helpful. Strike that off the list. Doctors, engineers.
Yeah,
well,
I agree with you on the lawyers front, Nick.
Are we? Or politicians?
Can I just come back to
we
you
won't
on that
get
point
a generation with of prime ministers.
Well, that might not be a bad thing.
No, I agree.
I think we've had enough in the last few years, don't you?
Yeah, I do.
Can I just come back to you on the point about, and I do think, I can understand why it's frustrating for students, but when she moves on to the higher pay bands as a doctor, which will happen in 2 or 3 years' time, yeah, you significantly go on the upturn wage.
But she'd still be paying interest, and get this, as she earns more, the interest could go up. So this is like the sort of reverse incentive. It's ridiculous.
You'd be putting that financial burden on the shoulders of, you know, of her patients.
I think where the argument, Matt, I will let, your line is actually starting to get a bit clicky and bangy, if that's the expression. Is there an argument that some professions, industries such as medicine, are made more attractive, perhaps with a lesser interest rate? Yes, but I think we have to be careful. The music means we must move on. Coming up after the news, demands that Peter Mandelson should pay back the £50,000 or £55,000 golden goodbye as an ambassador. We'll look at that. Plus, with pressure building on Prime Minister, what do his own constituents make of him?
Not great. I mean, the worst Prime Minister ever.
What's your advice to him? What would you say?
Quit. That would be amazing.
And follow the money. What do the bookies say?
The big question concerning the Prime Minister is how long can he hold on? I'm David Williams of The Rank Group, and I'll be bringing Nick all the betting news surrounding Starmer and what might be next.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock. Keir Starmer will address Labour MPs later, with some suggesting he should resign. Morgan McSweeney quit as his chief of staff yesterday over his advice to hire Lord Mandelson as US ambassador. That's despite knowing about the peers' continued friendship with the late sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. Speaking to Nick, the cabinet minister Baroness Smith rejected claims that Keir is looking to pass the blame.
How we got here was both a function of the appointments process, which needs to be reformed, and he will take action on
I
that.
See, I
it's
see.
It's also a function, Nick, of the fact that...
So it's Peter
Richard
Mandelson's
Powerful,
fault, it's
well,
Morgan McSweeney's
well,
fault.
Well, frankly, it is Peter Mandelson's
fault. It's the appointments procedure's fault. It's nothing to do with the... How does he get through his... Everything conspires against him.
Nick,
it's lucky he gets up in the morning, really, isn't it?
Nick, you're off on one, but I did just say that the Prime Minister has taken responsibility...
Andrew Mountbatten-Windsor has now been accused of sharing confidential trade information with Jeffrey Epstein. Newly released emails suggest he forwarded reports from his role as the UK's trade envoy in 2010 and 2011. Andrew has consistently and strenuously denied any wrongdoing. In the past few minutes, Kensington Palace has released a statement saying the Prince and Princess of Wales have been deeply concerned by the ongoing revelations from the Jeffrey Epstein scandal involving Andrew Mountbatten-Windsor. We'll bring you more on this as we get it. A court in Hong Kong has sentenced the pro-democracy campaigner Jimmy Lai to 20 years in prison. The 78-year-old, who's a British citizen, was found guilty of foreign collusion and sedition. The Foreign Office has called for his release, demanding an end for what it calls Mr. Lai's appalling ordeal. A group of MPs has warned hundreds of thousands of social homes in England are failing to meet basic standards. The report says many residents don't have their complaints taken seriously and repairs are slow. Alicia Walker is from the housing charity Shelter.
Ultimately, no one can live in a home that is full of damp and mould for any sort of extended period of time. People's health is deteriorating and there are things that can be done and the government needs to hurry up and make those things happen.
The government says it is taking action to improve social housing. And hundreds of flood warnings and alerts are in place across Britain after days of non-stop rain in some places. The vast majority are in England, but parts of Scotland and Wales are also affected. In this city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 29 at 10,399. The pound buys $1.36 and €1.14. LBC weather, cloudy without breaks of rain to start the day. Heavy rain will push into the southwest by the afternoon, with more flooding possible, a high of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
I'm going to tell you exactly what you need to do. Dominate your finances!
Sunday morning, listening to questionable financial advice from the FinTok Bros on his social feed.
Drowning in green. Scale, 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 scale.
This is the moment Isaac chose to search Barclays Life Skills, get some better money intel, and save up for that new skateboard. We're helping young people become money confident. Search Barclays Life Skills. Barclays. Make money work for you.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Morning, 3 minutes after nine on Monday, February the 9th. Coming up in this hour, Peter Mandelson under pressure now to pay back what could be around £50,000 so-called golden goodbye. He got the deal despite the disgrace of his links with Jeffrey Epstein. But what is the reality of getting the money back? Plus, to read or not to read, as our younger members, or younger members of society, it's revealed just 33% of children aged 8 years and over say they enjoy reading. And Tracy Beaker creator Dame Jacqueline Wilson says reading is in peril because children see it as boring. Older, or people in their teens and above, are suddenly snapping up copies of... Wuthering Heights by some 469%. We will, and not for the first time, celebrate the joy of reading later in the hour.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
And I've not even mentioned that Sir Keir Starmer is due to speak with his Labour colleagues, his Labour MPs, later today. What do you think he needs to say? I quit is not allowed. What also do people, his own constituents, make of him? What do the bookies make of him? And isn't it risible, risible, the idea now that Morgan McSweeney, with him going, that puts a full stop to the whole issue, as put forward by Jackie Baroness Smith. I know she's on the media round, just as Pat McFadden was yesterday, given the basic lines you have to explore, but just absurd to say he's a man of decision, please. We'll look at that in more detail. Now, let's talk first about Peter Mandelson and the story in yesterday's papers that he received a taxpayer-funded payoff worth tens of thousands of pounds. And let me just take a second there. His salary has not been published by the government yet, but the post of ambassador to the US typically commands the highest in the diplomatic service, known as pay band SCS4, between £155,000 and £220,000 per annum. Therefore, the Sunday Times calculated that Mandelson would have been in receipt of an exit payment of somewhere between £38,750 and £55,000. Whichever way you look at it, it's tens of thousands of pounds. And of course, given the scale of his, quotes, crimes, close quotes, and offences, and possible leaking of financial sensitive information, should we get our cash back? Well, what is the legal standpoint? Nick LaRiche is employment lawyer at the law firm Broadfield and joins me now. If it's in my contract, even if I bring LBC into extraordinary disrepute with whatever activities I get up to this afternoon at Charing Cross Station, presumably I still get my dosh, do I? Good morning.
Morning, Nick. Well, look, the Foreign Office have said that they reached a settlement to terminate Peter Mandelson's employment with immediate effect, and they believed at the time that they had to pay it. The 3 months notice, which we believe Peter Mandelson received, is a typical period for this type of departure under civil service contracts. And I suspect the government lawyers are poring over that settlement at the moment to try and find some terms to force him to repay it.
Are there any circumstances by which, if a payment has been made, and the sense is it already has, that you can demand partial or total repayment, Nick?
Well, there may have been promises given by Peter Mandelson under the settlement that he reached with the Foreign Office that he had acted in a various way, and that that he hadn't acted in a way that if the Foreign Office had known at the time, they wouldn't have entered into that settlement. And if that promise has been broken, they may be looking at whether that's enough to ask him to or require him to repay it.
That's an interesting point. And lastly, on the whole conversation, they talk about there needs to be changes to vetting, the betting procedure, the vetting structure. Does there need to be change in some way to employment contracts? If Mr. Mandelson is convicted of any of these crimes, does there need to be a clause, a caveat that in those terms, we get our cash back, Nick?
Well, sometimes there are, absolutely. And really well-drafted contracts will say that even if kind of notice monies have been paid, if it's subsequently discovered that the employer could have terminated without any notice, that the individual will have to repay those sums. So if you draft the contracts correctly, then there could be a way around that.
Nick LaRouche's employment law to be found at the law firm Broadfield. Thank you for your time. Should we call it 50? I mean, some newspapers are saying it's 50, some newspapers are saying it's 55. Let's call it 50 grand just for round it up or round it down. Should we get our 50 grand back? What do you say to that? Now, here's one person who's at the eye of the storm. The other, of course, is the Prime Minister himself, Sir Keir Starmer. So what do his own constituents make? Well, having gone via King's Cross and Tomahawk Road and Golden Square, LBC's reporter is in Mornington Crescent. Some of you will get that. Henry Riley joins me now. Good morning, Henry.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, this seat is solidly red. It's been Labour since its creation in 1983. And in May of 2015, they elected the former Director of Public Prosecution, Sir Keir Starmer. Now, the PM faces a backlash, as you mentioned, a revolt over the government's handling of the Peter Mandelson appointments. Lord Mandelson as UK ambassador to the US. He's also lost his right-hand man in Chief of Staff, Morgan McSweeney. So, as you say, what do his constituents in the Central London constituency of Hobart and St Pancras make of the unique predicament that their local MP is in?
Not very good. Not very good at all. He just uses people on his way up the ladder and forgets them when he comes down.
What advice would you give him? He lost his Chief of Staff yesterday.
Be careful who your friends are. Keep your enemies even close.
Step down, to be honest with you. Move aside, really, because he ain't really done anything for the country, has he, so far?
He's been put in a position that anyone else could only try and do their best.
Yeah. You think he's been given a bit of a hard time?
Definitely, yeah.
I think he'll carry on as the Prime Minister, yeah.
Do you think he's getting a sort of unfair deal?
Not particularly, no.
No, but do you think he's being treated unfairly in a way? Or?
No, I don't.
No? Okay.
The worst Prime Minister ever. I complained many times, well, mainly about Palestine, never got any response.
What's your advice to him? What would you say?
Quit. That would be amazing.
Now, it probably won't be first on his mind this morning, but his vote share here is also worth raising. In 2017, the Prime Minister enjoyed a majority of over 30,000. Similar numbers in the 2019 election, nearly 28,000. But in the landslide general election with which he won in 2024, Nick, Sir Keir saw his majority slashed to just over 11,000 after being challenged. He was run close by an independent candidate.
LBC's Henry Riley reporting under the squawking birds of Hitchcock's latest movie. Does Henry Riley survive, or is he chased to a phone box and slashed to bits by a ravenous crow? There's only one way to find out. Stay tuned. So, we've talked about the employment side, we've talked about the constituents. What about the cash? Where's the money going? David Williams, bookmaker and director with Rank, joins me now. OK, what are the bets, and what are the bets telling us? Morning, David.
Yeah, good morning, Nick. How to put it politely, Keir Starmer is toast, according to the bookies. If you look at the odds on him surviving until Christmas are pretty hopeless. He is 1-5 to be out of a job this year. So that's, you know, given a bit of margin, that's about 80-85% likelihood that he will be out of number 10 this year. I was listening to you speaking with Kevin Hollenrake a little bit earlier. He talked about May and June, and that is exactly where the bookies have got that pivot. Of course, the local election's coming up.
Yep.
So I think probably heading into the new year, Nick, we were talking about, you know, will he survive after May? The question is, will he survive until May? And there's been a rush of money that he could be gone in the next few days. Such has been the intensity of this scandal.
And, David, if he goes and they unscrew his nameplate from the door, which is the next one they'll put in place, do we imagine?
Well, I thought this would be a little bit closer, a little bit tighter, the likes of Wes Streeting and Miliband, even Andy Burnham. But you guessed it, Nick, there is a clear favourite, and she is by some margin the clear favourite, Angela Rayner, 9-4, to be the next permanent leader of the Labour Party. She's on manoeuvres. We can see she's on manoeuvres. And she is by some distance clear of the second favourite, Wes Streeting, who's in there as a 5-1 shot. And if you had been clever enough to listen to you and me talking, Nick, back in November, we talked about the odds on Angela Rayner being the next Labour leader. 20-1.
Oh, no. Wow.
And now she is the 9-4 favourite.
Always good speaking with David Williams. Thank you, David, bookmaker and director with Rank. So many aspects to pick over. Let's go with the payoff, though. And should we get the payoff? Should they pay back the payoff? David in Hampstead. Where are you on that, David? This is Peter Mandelson, of course. Where are you on that, David? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Great show.
I think
Peter Mandelson should keep all of his money because, quite frankly, it shows a number of things. Number one, do you remember how our civil service is the envy of the world? The envy of the world is civil service. They can't even draft an employment contract that has clear terms for breach of contract, which is really basic stuff. So, quite frankly, you should keep it because it will show everyone what an envy they are. Number two, Keir Starmer, he's a forensic lawyer. How many times do we hear that?
Mm-hmm.
Forensic.
Yeah.
He's forensic, and he's the other one across the detail. Remember, he's a details man.
Yeah.
So none of these things really are true. And I think Peter Mandelson, I mean, he deserves everything that's coming to him. But quite frankly, this payoff, they can play funny games, and they could do their weird, like, political things, and they'll probably get about 50p a week back from him, and they'll say what a result that is. But in reality, they've messed up. He's obviously majorly messed up, but they've messed up, and now they're trying to claw back a little bit of their reputation, but their reputation's gone. They're no longer forensic. The civil service is a mess. The civil service can essentially get away with whatever they want. They can't fire anyone. Even when they do fire someone, they've got to pay them for the pleasure of doing so. They can't do anything right. They can't even run the country properly.
Although it pains me to think that there's 50-odd thousand pounds that we might be able to get back, we won't. In a sense, the way that it shows up whoever does our contracts and, of course, shows up the various mandarins. And I suppose ultimately it does land on the PM's desk. David, thank you for that. We'll have more calls on that. Coming up after the news, the joy of reading. I've told you so many times and I make no excuse for returning to it because it is so it unlocks so much of the world, particularly to young people. So what do we make of the creator of Tracy Beaker's series, Dame Jacqueline Wilson, warning reading is now becoming a niche hobby. She likens it to stamp collecting. She says children see it as boring. How do you switch on the light of literature to your children or possibly your grandchildren? We'll explore that. It's 9:15 LBC News headlines, read by Dominic Ellis.
Kensington Palace says the Prince and Princess of Wales have been deeply concerned by the ongoing revelations from the Jeffrey Epstein scandal involving Andrew Mountbatten Windsor. Speaking to Nick, a government minister has insisted that Sir Keir Starmer is taking responsibility for the Peter Mandelson saga. And a Hong Kong media tycoon and pro-democracy campaigner Jimmy Lai has been sentenced to 20 years in prison. LBC weather, cloudy with outbreaks of rain to start. Heavy rain pushing into the southwest later, a high of 11 degrees.
LBC travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Long delays on the M1 northbound to junction 13 at Bedford. It's because of the emergency repair works and two lanes are closed. Albert Bridge is closed in both directions for emergency repair works, and that's causing lengthy delays in the area, especially northbound over Battersea and Chelsea bridges. Very slow on the A40 eastbound, heading up towards the Swakelys roundabout, and that's where a car's broken down, and there are delays back onto the M40. On the train, Southern Cart run between Shepherd's Bush and Watford Junction. It's following a signal failure. Also, various delays and cancellations on London Northwestern and Avanti West Coast services between Milton Keynes Central and Euston.
This is LBC.
Mummy, please can you tell me a bedtime story?
Once upon a time there was a very tired mummy who'd been busy all day, and basically she was too knackered to cook, so she ordered herself sweet and sour chicken, special fried rice and some prawn crackers on Uber Eats instead.
That's not a very good story, Mummy.
Great ending though.
When you've done enough, Uber Eats, and get your favourite restaurants delivered. Check out for terms and restrictions.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973 LBC.
To be or not to be.
Right now we're offering a range of incentives across Audi models.
That is the...
But only until the 28th of February.
The,
So stop whatever you're doing.
I'll be right back. Just carry on without me.
And find yours online or at your local Audi centre. Audi. Vorsprung durch Technik. Terms and conditions apply. Selected models, retail customers and participating Audi centres only.
Thanks for the key deliverables, David. Now, who'd like to...
Stay out all night! Yahoo!
That's brilliant. So, OK, sales targets. Are we hitting...
The dance floor!
There's more than one you, and with Specsavers 2 for 1, you can choose glasses for at least two yous. From £70 with standard single-vision lenses.
Nice moves, David!
Book an appointment at specsavers.co.uk. Conditions apply.
Across the country, thousands of drivers are feeling electric about switching to an EV. And here's why. They can go from London to Sheffield on a single charge that could cost around a fiver. They're ecstatic about that and the exhilarating feeling behind the wheel. Plus, with charging made simple at home, they're always ready for the drive ahead. I can see why they're into it. Switch to an EV and get that electric feeling. Costs and range dependent on tariffs, model and driving habits. For full details, visit gov.uk/clean energy.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
More on Keir Starmer's plight, more on Peter Mandelson's payout to come. But again, just a side of distraction. And I'm the first to admit, I never miss an opportunity to talk about the joy of reading, because you may recall Kids Who Read Succeed campaign. Gosh, I think that was the year before last now, with various people reading books. Alan Titchmarsh, Sean Welby, Joanna Lumley, happily reading extracts from books on that campaign. So my eye was automatically drawn to a story. Now, I don't know the Tracy Beaker series, but I think it certainly speaks to a generation of youngsters who certainly, or people in their 20s who certainly do, created by Dame Jacqueline Wilson. So when she gives us a warning on literature, we should probably all tune in. And she says that reading among children now is akin to stamp collecting. It's like a niche hobby. She is, of course, a children's author, as the Daily Telegraph pointed out. She's sounding the alarm. She says reading is in danger. Intelligent children, well, don't worry about intelligent children, Dame Jacqueline, let's worry about them all, but anyway, intelligent children turning away from classic literature because it's boring. Just 33% of children, that is one in three, aged eight and above, say they enjoy reading in their free time. By the way, these aren't her figures, these are the National Literary Trust, and that's a considerable drop from over half 20 years ago. Now, for the government, Bridget Phillips in the Education Secretary says the collapse in child reading is a national security threat. Actually, that's probably not overdoing it. I should say that the interview with Dame Jacqueline features in the Big Issue magazine, where you can get more details. Now, the Department of Education has linked up with the Trust in an attempt to turn 2026 into a national year of reading, with events being organised in a concerted campaign to reverse the slumping interest in books. Just as a point of interest, this comes as grown-ups... By the way, the sale of Emily Bronte's Wuthering Heights have risen by 469% because of the new film adaptation. So that, by the way, I have to say, I never really got Bronte's work. I'm not a young woman racing around the dales of Yorkshire and Derbyshire, am I? Right, let's talk more about children's reading. That's what we need to get sorted. Come on, we need to get this resolved. Felicity Gillespie's chief executive of Kindred Squared, or that's Kindred with a letter 2 at the end, charity focusing on improving early years education. Right, we know the problem. Hit me with the solution. Good morning.
Good morning. I think the solution is to just spread the word amongst parents, because what we are finding in our school readiness research that we do every year is that parents are not understanding the link between reading to their child every day and all the other good things that come with positive child development.
Yep.
So speech development, all the kind of the brain development, the social development, all the other skills that come from that interaction, that two-way interaction when a parent reads to their child. And I think what's really interesting is, you know, teachers tell us one in four children are still starting school tapping and swiping at books. They just don't know how to use them.
What was that number again? Sorry, what?
28%. One in four. Yeah, it's staggering. And, you know, and half of teachers are saying that not reading to children does contribute to a lack of school readiness. So it's a really big thing. But because only 40% of children, only 40% of parents think children need to be able to use a book, you've got a real ignorance problem there. So I think getting the message out to parents about the positivity of reading to their children is absolutely critical.
How much is this almost a vicious circle? I.e., we have people going out now, perhaps in their 20s, mid-20s, who weren't great readers themselves, weren't read to that much, weren't read in school, so they don't get the relevance of literature, and unfortunately this is just going to keep feeding itself.
I don't know how much evidence there is of that. I think screen time, I think the sort of cultural shift that we're seeing in the use of phones is certainly something that we will see tracking forward, I imagine, having an impact on the amount of reading. What's interesting is teachers and parents are agreed that we've all got this nagging guilt, don't we, about we all use our phones too much. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, about half of teachers and half of parents all say that both parents and children using their screens too much is a real problem. But we're not really getting the message out that comes at a cost, and the cost is that children are getting delayed speech, they're not learning to read, they're not enjoying reading. You know, we model what children see, mirror us, don't they? Mm-hmm. If they see us reading a book, they're more likely to think that reading a book's what people do. If they see us scrolling on our phone as we're pushing the buggy along, or, you know, sitting on the sofa looking at our phone, they're more likely to think that phones are cool. So, you know, I think we've all got to play our part, put the phone down for 5 minutes and pick up a book.
Felicity Gillespie, always good speaking with you. Your chief executive of Kindred Squared. That's Kindred with the number 2 on the end. Julia's in New Malden. How important is reading as you raise your children or possibly your grandchildren? Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you. I got in touch because my daughter is 11. She absolutely has always loved reading.
Well, how did you get her into it? I mean, did you make sure that when she was, I don't know, a little baby, did you or your husband or whatever read to her? How did that actually work, Julia?
I read to her multiple times a day. She was always interested in books, which sat on my lap when she was tiny before she could even speak, and we would just read and read and read. She took off with it. And
How old is your daughter? Sorry.
She's 11 now.
She's 11. And if she has 4 or 5 or 6 mates around, would they all be good readers, or are some of them spend more time on their phones or whatever it might be?
No, her group of friends, they're all quite bookish.
Okay. Okay.
I think screen time is a massive part of it. We've always had very, very limited screen time. She's not allowed a mobile phone. Well, she has a brick, but no smartphone.
No, just one to call mum or dad or whatever it might be.
Yeah, exactly.
So what is an 11-year-old girl living in New Malden reading at the moment?
She's reading Mary Shelley's Frankenstein at the moment. they're reading the Philip Pullman version, which I haven't read yet, at school, and she felt it was too dumbed down. She said it's been put in, modern day, and it's all slang, and she says it's a bit sloppy. So she wanted to read the original, so she's...
So she wants the full gothic horror?
Yes.
God bless her. She's a bright young woman. Good luck to her. Julia, thank you so much. Give her, and of course, your whole family my regards. Cool, you've got to admire that young woman. Ah, this is too easy going. I want all the shock and the awe, and the awe and gore. Julia, be well. David's in Twyford. David, let's talk about a reading challenge. What's that all about? I've got a note here. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Nick. Yes, I normally live in South Australia. We have the Premier of the state there for about the last 15, 20 years has had a reading challenge for students. So they have a number of books. I just checked with one of my daughters. It's about 20-odd books per year.
What sort of age are we talking about here, David, of pupils, roughly?
Yeah, so right from primary school right through to high school. So every single year there's a challenge. And the books sort of get progressively more difficult, so there's a list that they can select from. There's about 20 or so books a year that they would read. And they get a medallion at the end of the year when they achieve it. And they progress each year, so you get better medallions as you...
I have a question.
As you progress through. Yeah,
I have a question, and I'm afraid this speaks to the sort of pupil that I was, but you know what the question is. How do they know I've actually read? Oh, look, g'day, sir, I've read this one. Where's my gong? But how do they know I've actually read it?
Yeah, well, a part of it comes down to parents being involved in that as well. And obviously, we're quite active with them in that. So we do a lot of reading with them. The lady before was talking about screen time and managing access to social media. And that's something that, I mean, obviously they've just had the social media ban which came in
long ago. Thank you, sir. Got to ask, do you have children that that has directly affected?
Yes. Yeah.
And their reaction?
Yeah, no dramas. It's because we already had that in place for them.
I see. Okay.
From a mental health point of view, it's just such a shocking blight on kids. And, you know, we would liken it to them. We wouldn't leave them in an unsafe part of town without supervision. That's the way we approach it with them. But the reading is something which we encourage them to do. They're not all readers. We've got there are 10 children in total. And
you have 10 children?
Yes, yeah. So,
wow. All by the same mum, or is that stepchildren as well?
There are some foster children
foster.
As well.
Okay, right, well done. So and let me ask you this lastly. Obviously, I sense that you probably enjoyed a book as a young lad. Was that, again, courtesy of mum or dad, or did you just pick it up yourself, or how did that come about?
I had a bookshelf in my bedroom, and I could just read whatever I wanted. I just loved it. Yeah. It was just magic. Not all of our kids are readers, but I mean, 20-year-old who's with us over here at the moment, I can't remember what she's reading. She's reading through something fairly chunky at the moment.
Right.
They have, different interests, and they just enjoy it. It's part of their life, so it's good.
Look after all the children. Great work with the fostering you're doing, David. Thank you. Talking about Australia, although David's here, now we're off to Marbella. Dorothy, are you there living or on holiday? Which is it, Dorothy?
No. Good morning. Hi, Nick. We're on holiday.
I hope the weather's good.
Oh, it's been terrible.
Oh, no.
It's been the worst winter they've had for 25 years.
Oh, you poor thing. Oh, God. How much longer are you there for? I'll get there eventually.
We've been here for 3 weeks. We've got another week.
Is the weather going to pick up?
It is. In the last week, it's going to be nice.
Perfect.
But they've had floods and trees down, and I feel so sorry for them, the locals, because it's been, you know, the houses here aren't built for this kind of weather, and it's just been appalling. But anyway.
Terrible. Talk reading. You take lots of books with you, I imagine, but we're talking children and reading. What can you tell me on that?
Yeah. Our granddaughter, who is dyslexic, she's struggled with reading massively, and she would often say, oh, I wish I could sit down and read a book like the others. I'd really love to be able to do that. Yesterday, it was her 14th birthday, we were talking to her, and she just dropped into the conversation that she's now off the reading program, and she can read whatever she likes, and she is so happy.
Hang on.
She's
no longer dyslexic?
No, she's dyslexic.
Oh, I see.
She's not on the progressive, you know, children's school.
They
go through all the different books they learn to read. And now, at the age of 14, she's off that reading program. And she's now been told that she can just choose books that she wants to read. And she's so happy that she can now read.
Is Grandma a big reader? You love your books as well?
Yeah, I read all the time. Yes, I read. But, it's such a big thing for her that she can now enjoy what she's always wanted to do, is to sit and read.
Well, that's an absolute positive. Fantastic. I'm sorry the weather's pretty gloomy, but that was a ray of sunshine from your granddaughter. And I hope the weather picks up for your final week. Dorothy, enjoy. We don't want any more rain in Spain. You want some good times in Spain. No more pain in Spain. All right, Nick, enough of all of that. Coming up after the news. Well, it's a drama involving a... Everybody identified that animal? Everybody? If not, I'll tell you after the news. 9:31, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, here on LBC News Time. Dominic Ellis.
The Prince and Princess of Wales say they're deeply concerned by the ongoing revelations from the release of the Jeffrey Epstein files. New emails suggest Andrew Mountbatten Windsor shared confidential trade information with Epstein when he was UK trade envoy. A government minister has rejected claims that Sir Keir Starmer is not taking responsibility for the Lord Mandelson scandal. Baroness Smith has told Nick the Prime Minister is determined to overhaul the vetting system for senior appointments. And a court in Hong Kong has sentenced the pro-democracy campaigner Jimmy Lai to 20 years in prison. The 78-year-old British national was convicted under China's national security law. LBC weather, cloudy with outbreaks of rain to start. Some heavy rain will push into the southwest by the afternoon, a high of 11 degrees.
This is LBC.
This is 40-year-old Kathy, mother of two and self-confessed telly addict.
Oh, look at you. That's brilliant. Well done.
This is also Kathy, working as part of a team to keep things calm at her local prison.
Come on. Come on. Let's go.
and helping someone's son write his first letter home in 8 months.
Well done. You should be really proud.
Thank you, miss.
An extraordinary job done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
The day keeps dragging. You can't concentrate, and there's that nagging feeling that you just want to smoke. Don't let nicotine cravings break your stride. Nicorette gum relieves smoking cravings fast and provides relief that can last for up to 3 hours. Make 2026 the year you quit and enjoy freedom from smoking and vaping with help from Nicorette. Quitting made real. Nicorette 4 mg gum contains nicotine. Stop smoking or stop nicotine vaping aid. Requires willpower. Always read the label.
Lost World Play Barn, Dragon Castle Children's Farm, Jumping Pillows, Wallabies, Froggy Soft Play. Tommy Tractor Play Barn, Quadrapilla Rowing Boats, Owl Displays, Meerkats, Honey Pot Bears. And 4 giant slides on the brand new Wave Runner 2. Let's plunge!
What's next, Dad?
Cannon Arena Lemurs, Jungle Kingdom Go-Karts, Trampolines, Magical Wood and Cafes.
Nutcatch Adventure Park.
The fun goes on and on and on and on.
Book now at nutcatch.com.
Donations to British Heart Foundation fund scientific research that can help save lives. People like Joe, who's pitching his next big business plan. Maria, who's sending out her wedding invitations. And Jack, who's just being a teenager again. Because when you donate, you fund more than just science. You help save lives. British Heart Foundation funds research that aims to cure inherited heart muscle diseases. But our work is not done. Donate now at bhf.org.uk and keep us beating.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Back to the importance of reading, particularly for children, and back to, of course, the importance of that political drama as it plays out, whether it's Peter Mandelson having to return his anywhere between £35,000 and £50,000 payoff, which is part of his employment contract, by the way. And Sir Keir Starmer, of course, it wasn't his fault, it was his advisers. I mean, goodness me, advisers advise and ministers decide. Oh, hang on a second, it was still his decision, wasn't it? We might come back to that. But what a story involving this animal. Yes, it's a llama drama, for those of you who didn't understand. Can I share something with you? My view in a few years, well, more than a few, quite a few years' time, I want to live in a rural idyll by some water, preferably with a river. I want to be farming llamas, and I want my latest wife, that sounds wrong, my latest wife, I want my wife, my new one of the same one, driving around in a Land Rover, throwing bales of hay at llamas. Well, sorry, I'll do the driving, she can throw the bales of hay at llamas. That is my rural idyll. I am fascinated by llamas. So when I saw in the paper that a heroic herd of llamas cornered a would-be thief in a field until police arrived to arrest him, the thief, not the llama. This is Heidi Price and Graham Oliver, who were alerted to the intruder on their farmland when the animals emitted their warning cry. Was that their warning cry? Should we hear one? I don't know if I think that was the llama. I think that was something else, actually, if that was going on. The suspect had stolen tobacco from a woman before jumping over a fence in a farm in South Normanton, I misread that, Normanton, but his bid to flee from police in the dusk ended in chaos when 8 llamas galloped over, surrounded him, and wouldn't let him out. So he gave himself up. Wow, Dr. Roger Mugford is a leading animal behavioural expert. Have you ever kept llama, Doctor?
Yes, I have. Yeah, I've had 3, Helen.
I've had 3. Envious.
And I live in that sort of ideal that you're just describing, Although I don't have a river beside me. I do have a farm in Devon with a river. I adored my llamas. They were getting, because we have a lot of dog owners coming onto my farm for training, they were getting quite aggressive to the dogs. So llamas are very protective, very territorial, and it's wonderful that they arrested this no good person.
How easy are they to maintain? I used to keep donkeys years ago. Donkeys are pretty much self-starters. They look after themselves. As long as you give them a salt lick and some water, they're fairly happy souls. Would you say the same of llama?
No, they're very easy to keep. As you say, you have to send the wife out with a bale of hay occasionally. but this time of the year, which isn't very pleasant because you probably get stuck in the mud. But no, they're really intelligent. I kept them to protect and guard my sheep.
Right.
Against foxes primarily, but also stray dogs. and they're really efficient.
And what is it that sparks in there? They're just exceptionally proprietorial. Is that what it is? They're like, yeah, I mean, don't laugh, but they're like a guard llama. They're like a guard dog, guard llama kind of thing.
Exactly. They've formed very strong attachments to their regular owners, me, say, or this nice lady, Heidi.
Yeah.
And nobody else is allowed on their patch. Now, let's face it, they're not really very aggressive. They don't kick.
I was going to say, do they bite? Because, I mean, you wouldn't want to be kicked by a donkey. Not that they kick out, but if you accidentally get one in the rear end from a donkey, it does hurt, and I can testify to that. Do they bite or kick?
They will bite, and they will spit. And interestingly, these didn't spit. They're fairly well known as very accurate spitters. And a distance of all 6 feet or more, mine would. They do not like intruders, but especially the four-legged types. But on this occasion, they got a two-legged person.
They did. And lastly, are they related to alpacas? Are they the same sort of theme or gene or something?
Same family. They're all camelids, and they all come from South America. The alpacas are much friendlier and not quite as beefy. Of course, they're half the size. Incredibly cute.
Well, if I go back, lastly, Roger, to my rural idyll by the river, can I keep a bit of both? Or will they fight each other to the death, llamas?
No, they work quite well together. And I've had crossbreeds, they will interbreed, in other words. So, and then you get a really interesting shaped animal. But mine were quite well known because they used to stray across a bridge over the M25 and lots of people ring up the police saying there's some strange looking animals on the M25.
And they'd say, Roger, your damn llamas are out. Lastly, can you remember the names of your three llama?
They didn't have names. I was
Tom, Dick and Harry or something like that.
No, I resisted that temptation.
Always good speaking, Roger. Be well, best of the family. Roger Mugford, Dr. Roger Mugford, leading animal behavioural expert and former llama keeper or llama owner. If you've ever owned llama, what's the reality of that? We will come back to the political scene, of course we will. But just to lift the mood for a moment, is it so wrong? We're talking reading with Freddie in Chichester. Hello, Freddie.
Hello.
How are you, young man?
I'm really good today.
What sort of age are you?
I'm nine. Just turned nine.
What's the best thing about being nine?
That you're older than eight.
You're a clever young man. So, would you rather watch TV, read a book, or get on your phone or iPad or computer?
Read a book.
Why?
Because reading quite exciting, and if you have like a really good book, it's just good for your brain, and it can be quite exciting to you.
You're a very bright young man. Can I ask what you're reading now?
Right now I'm reading.
You're reading about Cristiano Ronaldo.
Yeah,
I finished. Were you impersonating your mum then? Because that was a very good impersonation of your mum.
That was my mum.
That was your mum, right. What, yeah. You're reading a book about... Was it Cristiano Ronaldo, did I hear?
Yeah.
Okay. What are you learning about Cristiano Ronaldo, Freddie?
I finished the book, but there was something I didn't know that I learned. That when he was younger, he had laser surgery on his heart. Laser surgery.
Good Lord. He's the one who's incredibly fit and still playing in his 40s or something, isn't he? Is that the right one? Wow. Yeah. And so when Christmas or birthday comes around, do you always ask mum and dad or grandparents, do you get loads of books? How do you make sure you've got lots to read, Freddie?
Well, I don't really get as many books now because I've got, like, a massive shelf in my room.
Have you?
Which is, like, stacked with, like, 100 books.
You've got a got 100 books in your bedroom?
Yeah, nearly.
Question. What's the best book you've read? So, what was one that you just, oh, Mum, I can't go to bed, I can't go to sleep, please let me just have another 10 minutes. I've got to see the end of... What book would that be?
I got a Minecraft book, which is really exciting.
Yeah, that's big as well, yeah. How many of your mates read the same level of your that you do, Freddie?
There's probably about one person who's higher than me at school.
One, okay. And do you have any interest in getting a mobile phone, or you're just enjoying the world of books and everything like that?
I'm just enjoying the world of books.
You know your mum was... Is mum still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hello, Mum. Are you Hi. Emma?
I am, yes.
What
Hi.
A
How
bright
you doing?
Young man.
He is. I know, but a lot of it is due to the school. The school really do encourage the school really encourage reading. He's at a state school. It's right. not like we're paying for it.
Right.
But he's got the year group is a really solid group of boys. Don't get me wrong.
Right.
But they really encourage reading, and it's cool to read at school. Like, it's not something that we have to fight with him to get to do, which is really nice as a parent.
Right. Okay. You should be, and I'm sure you are hugely proud. He's a very, very bright
young
man. But it doesn't just happen. I would imagine you made sure, as soon as you possibly could, possibly even when he was in his cot, that you were reading to him. Is that what happened?
Yeah, we did always read every night. We've got three children as well, so we have to spread it out between reading one-on-one with each of them. And my husband's a firefighter, so he's not always home to do it. So it's often me on my own trying to tag team between them.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's an evening where I'll go in and I'll read Harry Potter with Freddie, and then other evenings I'll go and read a pony story with my daughter. So we'll kind of try to just at least have one evening where we're reading with them. And then other evenings where Freddie is quite good at reading on his own. But it's finding something that he'll really enjoy. So he really loves football or horrible histories. Like, there's a number of different things that they really can get into that are fun for kids to read.
How fantastic. Well, you should be very proud. And well done the school, lastly, Emma. That's great they have that initiative, isn't it?
Yeah, they're fantastic. And they do, when you were asking the other guy about how do you know that the children have read it, they have a test at the end of each book. So they go in and do the test. And so they're then actually seeing whether the children are actually taking in the information and can identify where there's issues and things like that. So it's a really good system.
Brilliant. How soon can Freddie be Prime Minister? How much longer can he hold?
Not soon enough, I tell you. I've got big plans for him.
I bet you have for the whole family. Thanks so much for letting your boy come on the line. Freddie, best of luck to you, young man. Have yourself a great day. Emma, thank you for your time. Just to clarify, we would never have spoken to Freddie, of course, without Mum's permission. Wouldn't you think we'd ever dream of doing that? But clearly, seeing as he's brighter than me, I don't think we had too many problems. He's probably better read than I am. I don't have any problems. Lisa's in Crawley. Lisa, who are we talking about? Good morning.
I think you probably should end the conversation with your last caller.
Oh, no. I want to hear. We're talking about your grandson.
So, my grandchildren now, but my grandson was born, I mean, he's seven now, or he'd be seven in September, every single Thursday evening we do a WhatsApp FaceTime where it's story time. So even when he was a baby and couldn't actually focus on the screen or anything like that, I would read to him. And we've done that all the time. And then when my granddaughter was born, we continued to do it, and we still do it to this day. And I was going to say about the schools doing more, making sure that these children are reading. I just think it's so good as well. The one thing that reading does, it takes you from reality and it puts you into another realm. And I just think this day and age, some of these children need to be out of their reality just for a short time.
Can I put it to you, Lisa, this is what I normally say about movies. Say about books. The best movies you'll ever see are the books you're reading, because you make the movie in your head.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think as well, movies from books are a good way of showing children that actually these stories come from, for example, Harry Potter. There'll be many children that have seen the films but haven't read the books. But to be able to say to them, this started in a book, this was a book, I think is really, really important.
Totally agree with you. Lisa, best wishes to your grandchildren. Coming up after news, we will come back to those important stories, of course we will. Peter Mandelson, can we have our up to £50,000 back, please? And Sir Keir Starmer, what is the point? It's 9:45, LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
The Prince and Princess of Wales say they're deeply concerned by the ongoing revelations from the release of the Jeffrey Epstein files. A government minister has rejected claims that Sir Keir Starmer's not taking responsibility for the Lord Mandelson scandal. And a court in Hong Kong has sentenced the pro-democracy campaigner Jimmy Lai to 20 years in prison. LBC weather cloudy with outbreaks of rain to start. Heavy rain will push into the southwest by the afternoon, a high of 11 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Albert Bridge remains closed in both directions for emergency repair works, and there are lengthy delays in the area, especially northbound over Battersea and Chelsea Bridge. bridges. On the M25, anti-clockwise, very busy heading towards Junction 10 at the A3. Just after the junction, a lorry's broken down, so one lane is closed. Two problems on the M1 southbound. Firstly, there are delays at Junction 12 at Flitwick. That's where a car's broken down. And then there are delays southbound just after Junction 11 at Dunstable South. And that's after an accident. On the train, Southern Cart run between Shepherd's Bush and Watford Junction. That's all down to a signal failure. And there are minor delays on the Bakerloo line.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, James O'Brien.
No prizes for guessing what's first up on the big show this morning. Yet more Starmer drama. Where will it end? And flooding. If it was London, it would be the biggest story in town.
James O'Brien at 10. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Okay, that's six of the ragu and the linguine. Make a move, everyone, please.
The customers are rolling in at Stefano's new restaurant, so he needs another chef. Someone with a cool head and an appetite for success.
More flour in the bechamel, let's go.
Indeed can help him find great people fast.
I need Indeed.
Indeed you do. Sponsor a job on Indeed to unlock more tools that save you time and help you hire quality candidates. To start hiring, visit Indeed.com/try today.
This is LBC. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app. Download it now from your app store.
At Ocado, you'll save 25% on your first shop and get free delivery. Which means if you were to buy a four-cheese pizza, you'd basically be getting one of the cheeses for free. Save and splurge at Ocado, the online supermarket. Geographical and other restrictions. Minimum spend £60 and charges apply. New customers only. Maximum saving £20 terms at Ocado.com.
Why are you abseiling down the front of your house, Ross? You have a staircase.
I like doing things the hard way, Albert.
Try something easier, Ross. Get cheaper off-peak energy. It's available at different times, like during the day or weekends. Just get a smart meter and choose a flexible scheme or tariff.
Ooh, I could batch cook some quiche.
Perfect. With a smart meter, getting cheaper energy is easier than you think.
Eligibility varies. Action required. Schemes and tariffs available to selected customers.
Okay, do emails. Ah, burnt toast. And now I've got to sort my repeat prescription.
Or just tap the NHS app.
The one I've already got?
Yep, you can check test results, view your GP health record and request repeat prescriptions anytime, anywhere.
All while the kettle's boiling?
Before it boils. And turning on notifications means you'll know the moment you get a new message.
Mm.
We're delivering an NHS fit for the future. Never miss a message. Request repeat prescriptions and more when you tap the NHS app.
You want £1 million.
I'd love £1 million.
So you enter the birthday draw and you think of a way to spend £1 million.
I'd buy a really nice suit.
It's a lucky day, and you win the birthday draw.
I'm rich!
But instead of a suit, you buy a jetpack. And ruin your sister's wedding.
So sorry, I'm late to the land!
Is it your lucky day? For your chance to win £1 million, just search the birthday draw and enter now. From Global and ITV. 18 plus UK only, no purchase necessary.
Every day, the noise gets louder. Deadlines tighter, commutes longer, opinions stronger. And social media fakes get harder to spot. You need concise, verified, easy access to the stories that matter. You need the Bulletin app. Trusted news from The Independent in a simple, bite-sized format. Download Bulletin today on iOS or Android. Bulletin. Trusted news for seriously busy people.
At ulisprosperity.com, you buy the car and we pay you up to £600 per month in rental income. For conditions, visit ulisprosperity.com.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
In the first hour of the show, if you weren't listening, and of course you don't have to start at 7, but it's nice if you can, we asked a simple question. Sir Keir Starmer, what's the point, question mark? This is someone who clearly doesn't take any key decisions, because we now know Morgan McSweeney was to blame. This is someone who brought in a government that promised growth, and we've gone from 0.5 to 0.1. We have unemployment at an 11-year high, and even his attempt to try and help Jimmy Lai, the democracy campaign, he got 20 years last night. So everything this man touches goes wrong. Everything. So it's something that I put to Jackie Smith, or Baroness Smith, my apologies, who was on the round. I asked her, Keir Starmer, what's the point?
Prime Minister is taking responsibility. He has accepted. He has accepted.
Oh, for goodness sake, Jackie.
He's accepted that this was the wrong decision. He's apologised to Jeffrey Epstein's victims.
Do you know that's the best laugh I've had since Michael McIntyre on Saturday?
Now he
is risible.
Well, there's not. I don't think there's anything laughable about this.
To say that he's taken responsibility.
I was in the middle of explaining to you how he's taking responsibility. First of all, as soon as it became clear the extent of Peter Mandelson's relationship with Jeffrey Epstein, the Prime Minister fired him.
So, of course, it's no idea that the ministers actually decide. Nick in Windsor, what do you want to say, Nick? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. You've got a Prime Minister there that the U-turn's worse than an Uber driver who's got a broken GPS system. You've got... I know, I thought I'd make you chuckle.
That was a good one. That's a good
you've
one.
Got you've got a Prime Minister, he's offered Morgan McSweeney, after firefighter Pat McFadden did the morning media rounds,
yep.
He's offered Morgan McSweeney as a sacrificial lamb to the electorate.
Yep.
And the electorate still demands more. And you've got cabinet ministers who are not on resignation watch, but on leadership watch, because obviously the prospective leader who wants to be leader won't resign. They'll want another one to go first, that to turbocharge their leadership chances. So I think Keir Starmer's going to punch the nuclear detonation button, which will be the 7th of May, 2026, and there'll be a general election on this date.
What? Hang on, a general election on
the 7th of May.
Why on earth would he do that?
Because the last Labour Prime Minister to resign was Harold Wilson, I think, was in 1974.
Right.
So, and it's very difficult to kick out your Labour leader.
Within Labour circles.
So you can't just boot out.
Political suicide? You mean he'd take the party down him?
Absolutely.
Oh, I see. So in an act of spite, he'd destroy the party.
Have it.
Right.
Yes. And he's offered so much to the electorate as a sacrificial lamb.
Okay. Lastly, if that didn't happen, and if we just look at the fevered speculation at the moment that it's going to be Angela Rayner following her new hairdo, or it's going to be Wes Streeting, or it's going to be Ed Miliband, would a change of the name on the front door at number 10 make a blind bit of difference?
No, it won't. You know, you can change leaders as many times as you can have hot dinners, but the electorate wants in the general election. You can feel it in the air. So I think every single news channel has literally got number 10 Downing Street out waiting for the lectern, because apparently it's supposed to address the nation. But we've U-turned on that one as well.
Lastly, I don't know, have you heard what Alistair Campbell has been saying on The Rest Is Politics? Did you hear me play that?
I did indeed, yeah. I think he's right. I disagree with Alistair Campbell a lot, but I think he's right.
Ungovernable.
Yes.
All right. Nick, thank you. I wouldn't put a lot of money on the idea of a general election on the 7th of May, but I would set some store by what Alistair Campbell has been saying on his politics, on his podcast, I'm so sorry, on his podcast, The Rest Is Politics.
Because of the nature of our politics, the quality, if you like, of our politicians and the political gene pool, the nihilism of much of the mainstream media, the anarchy of social media, with dissonance, hypocrisy, short-termism, naivety, industrialised rage and willful ignorance off the scale, that we're becoming almost ungovernable, that neither the parties nor the public are really prepared to face up to the big things that need to happen to turn this country around.
So the mainstream media is nihilistic, social media is anarchic, hypocritical, short-termism, naivety, industrialised rage and willful ignorance. So says Alistair Campbell, and it's made us almost ungovernable. He was quite happy to have a go then when the other lot were in power, wasn't he? John's in Enfield. John, you're on the radio. Morning.
Oh, hello, Nick. All that political gobbledygook really gets on my nerves.
Right.
Three or four quick points I want to make to you, which I think which is very important, where you've got to look at the bigger picture. Now, Ian Duncan Smith was in Washington the other day trying to get the Americans not to go ahead with the Chagos deal, and he's on record as saying that Peter Mandelson was brought in as the snake oil liar, right, to sell the Americans the lie of the Chagos, which ultimately is going to go to Mauritius, but is going to go to China.
Well, that's what people fear. Yes.
Yeah. So you bear that one in mind. The second one is you've got Starmer that's gone ahead with a super spy mega embassy, and basically what I heard was he would only get 45 minutes of Xi Jinping's time if before he left he agreed to that super spy embassy. Yeah?
So where did you pick this up from?
I've been looking at news and I don't know where, but I'll pick
right.
That's what BFM made. So
almost a man down the pub sort of thing, is it? No.
Well, just bear in mind that he's going to go, he's sanctioned the super spy embassy.
I know.
The third point is, I mentioned, you know, this Project Goal,
yeah.
Where they've invested $500 million into Southampton. And when I said that to you, but you said we haven't got a car industry. We actually employ about 900,000 people that work for your Nissans, Toyotas,
Stellantis, presumably.
It's worth about £23 billion to this economy worldwide. You know.
So, what is your final? Sorry, I need to get to your final point, John.
Right. They're sanctioning a wind turbine as well in Inverness, which is 1.0.
Okay. I think, John, we're all over the place. Sorry, there's no one theme coming from here. We've gone everywhere from Chagos to Inverness. I will leave it there if you don't mind. We need a little more focus. Give the last minute to Ahmed in New Malden. Ahmed, the point you want to make. Good morning.
Good morning, Mike.
Yes.
Thanks to the media, the demise of Keir Starmer as Prime Minister of United Kingdom is exaggerated and is simply being stoked up by the media, basically. And
when you have his own MPs, including Rachel Maskell in York, saying that he's really no longer fit for purpose, why is that the media's fault?
And these people are not fit for the purpose themselves.
Right.
Keir Starmer is not my favourite person as a Prime Minister,
right.
But he's a decent person.
He is a decent person. He's a well-meaning person. He's just not a very good politician.
His chief of staff has resigned, who was responsible for advising...
No. Lastly, advisers advise, ministers decide, Ahmed. Boo, did you say?
I said he just fell for the charm of this Prince of Darkness.
Does it not speak to his level of competence then, Ahmed?
Well, not in the circumstances. He looked all right.
He looked all right with nicknames like Scandalson and the Prince of Darkness. He looked all right.
It's Mendelssohn. He should be the one who should be crucified, not Keir Starmer.
All right. You're a Starmer fan, and I respect that, sir. I think you might be one of a dying breed, but we will see what the next... I was going to say 24 hours. Let's see what James is showing. You can never know. The next 3 hours might hold you. You just don't know anymore. I'm done. James O'Brien's the other side of the news on LBC. I'm back with you, of course, tomorrow morning from 7. Meantime, stay safe.
Thank you very much indeed, Nick. The strangest line I've come across in the context of what you've been discussing is that the Prime Minister became, and I quote, a pescatarian forced to eat dog food. It's a theory based upon the idea that his own values were overlooked in the sort of projects overseen by this chap, Morgan McSweeney, who has now walked the plank. I don't actually like the mornings where you find yourself under attack from both sides. People remaining loyal to Keir Starmer and feeling that he's a man more sinned against than sinning. And then I'll get an equal number of messages from people claiming that I'm sticking up for him and it's all my fault. The truth lies somewhere between the two stools, doesn't it? And it is ultimately a question of competence.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, the Prince and Princess of Wales say they're deeply concerned by the continued revelations from the Jeffrey Epstein files. The latest allegations suggest Andrew Mountbatten Windsor shared confidential information with Epstein when he was UK trade envoy. Andrew has consistently and always strongly denied any wrongdoing over his links to the late sex offender. LBC's Henry Riley is following developments.
This is the first time we've heard from the Prince and Princess of Wales regarding the Epstein scandal. A spokesperson from Kensington Palace said that William and Kate were deeply concerned by the revelations and were focused on the victims. The Prince is heading to Saudi Arabia for the start of a 3-day tour of the Middle Eastern country.
Sir Keir Starmer will address Labour MPs later as he fights to save his job following the Lord Mandelson scandal. His Chief of Staff, Morgan McSweeney, resigned yesterday. He said he took full responsibility for advising the Prime
Prime Minister to appoint the peer as US ambassador. Speaking to LBC, the Labour peer Baroness Smith rejected claims that Sir Keir is looking to pass the blame.
As soon as it became clear the extent of Peter Mandelson's relationship with Jeffrey Epstein, the Prime Minister fired him. Secondly, he has apologised to Jeffrey Epstein's victims for making this decision.
The Foreign Secretary Yvette Cooper says the government will rapidly engage with China on the case of Jimmy Lai, the Hong Kong media tycoon and pro-democracy campaigner, has been sentenced to 20 years in prison. The 78-year-old, who is a British citizen, was found guilty of foreign collusion and sedition. Universities have been told to report threats of foreign interference directly to the government and security services. MI5 and the National Cyber Security Centre have given a rare briefing to more than 70 institutions. University leaders were given guidance on how to recognise and resist attempts to manipulate their work. And a consortium led by the delivery firm FedEx has agreed to buy the parcel locker firm InPost for £6.8 billion. They plan to expand the service across the UK and Europe. In this city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 30 at 10,400. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.14. LBC weather, cloudy, without breaks of rain for the morning. Heavy rain will push into the southwest by the late afternoon, a high of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Tesco Insurance are driving down the cost of motoring with 10% off car insurance. Take out a car insurance policy before the 15th of May 2026 and you'll get 10% off with club card prices. We offer a range of cover options so you can choose the one that's right for you. Save 10% when you buy or renew a car policy with Tesco Insurance. Search Tesco Car Insurance and get a quote direct today. Club card required. Excludes add-ons. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It's 3 minutes after 10 is the time. In a world of confusion and flux, chaos and unprecedented change, it's somehow reassuring to know that some things will remain constant. Somebody said to me yesterday, I can't wait until Kemi Badenoch explains why the entire Mandelson scandal is down to her deft questioning at PMQs. And I laughed, thinking it was a joke, which it was. But it wasn't, because she is now, I think, explaining why the whole Mandelson scandal is down to her deft questioning at PMQs. God, give me the confidence of Kemi Badenoch. Honestly. It's all about the cults, isn't it? I think. Or at least my job is today. Or at least what makes me approach something I love, talking about politics with clever people. That's you, that is. With a little bit more trepidation than I might feel on another day. Is because of the brickbats that will come in from various angles towards little old me, towards your humble presenter. And there are three cults. What a bunch of cults that I have identified. Two of which I think are very, very cultish. And one of which is only mildly cultish, but towards which I feel a lot more warmth than I do towards the other two. So there are three cults. All of whom pollute our ability to have a sensible conversation about the unalloyed mess that Keir Starmer finds himself in this morning. We'll start with the first cult, actually, and that would be the cult that contends Keir Starmer is not actually in a mess and that everything is created by the media, and to personalise it for a moment, as I must, because I'm me, I am now guilty of joining in on an unjustified and an unfair pylon instead of, very carefully, and if I'm honest with you, because we all suffer from a little bit of footballification, and my tribe is the one that doesn't want the corruption, the cronyism and the chaos, most obviously typified by Boris Johnson and the heir apparent, of course, being Nigel Farage. My tribe is the one that doesn't want to go back to anything like that again, to Liz Truss's economics, to Boris Johnson's contempt for norms and rules and regulations, to Brexit's contempt for gravity and observable reality. I don't want those people to have another go. That is my tribe. And the biggest... do you have a problem with words? Are there any words in your brain that you always think you've got a bit wrong? Bulwark. You know, bulwark. B-U-L-W-A-R-K. Is that how you pronounce it? You don't pronounce it like a castrated male bovine. It's bulwark. Is it bulwark? I think it, well, anyway. Keir Starmer was the biggest bulwark
against that. And of course, for the time being, at least, still is. So that's where my biases lie. Can you call someone biased when what they are opposed to is idiocy, incompetence, corruption, and national self-harm? I don't know, but, you know, that's where we are. So cult number one, I'm afraid, contains the Starmer cultists, the people, and I think I probably get a slightly unrepresentative exposure to those people, because I fully appreciate that you feel I'm letting you down. But what I've done is very carefully and very reluctantly chronicle the various stages on the path to where we are today. And it is a path replete with many milestones, whether you want to call them U-turns or mind changes, or whether you want to call them missteps or aberrations, mistakes or failures, whatever you want to call them. You can't, of course, call them scandals, because they weren't, but the Mandelson thing is, you would have to properly map them to the point where we are today. And I'm afraid that makes you mildly cultish if you're pretending that this is somehow a conspiracy, or that this is lots of people are behaving unfairly. They behaved unfairly when they had a go at him about his glasses and the donkey sanctuary and all the other personalized things that right-wing media will always do. But there has to come a point where you acknowledge that actually there are some very real problems here, and they are today looking very, very close to insurmountable. So that's your first and perhaps less obvious cult. Unless you are me on Blue Sky, you may not actually see that, or indeed glancing at my inbox on a Monday morning like today, you may not actually see much evidence of the people who believe that Starmer is still much more sinned against than sinning, even as his own carefully assembled project begins to fall apart at the seams. The other two cults are very obvious, and they are much bigger cults. Some might go so far as to say they're massive cults, or at least they contain massive cults. The first is the Johnson one, which has found a leader. I saw a headline this morning under Richard Madeley's byline, saying something like, this proves that Boris Johnson was treated unfairly. I thought you had to be a brain dead caller to a radio phone in station to make that point. I didn't realise you could be a professional journalist. This proves that Boris Johnson was treated unfairly. So there is an example of a massive cult. Boris Johnson somehow being the real victim here. Boris Johnson, whose list of actual scandals, as we covered on Fridays, we don't really need to do it again, but egregious, law-breaking, hideous breaches of ministerial codes and traditions and security service advice. I mean, absolutely off the charts, moral corruption, and quite possibly political corruption as well. So to come to this by sort of seeing it through a lens of Boris Johnson being badly treated is evidence of cultishness on a scale that's visible from space. And they have a spiritual leader now in Richard Madeley. And then, of course, the other cult is the Corbyny cult, who are so delighted that a man who actually got elected Prime Minister as leader of the Labour Party has come a massive cropper that they've forgotten what they will leave the door open to if they're too busy celebrating to actually start resisting.